apologize once again because it was beyond our power that we start very late. But at the same time, I do trust that we are going to have a fruitful meeting. I know the members are ready to deliberate on the today's presentation. Today we are expecting the department to present their budget for 2010, and then including the program and projects that are going to be implemented in this financial year. I think last week we had a very extensive meeting where we were deliberating on the five-year strategic plan of the department. And we hope that this annual spread plan and performance is going to be articulated, the issues that were raised in the first meeting are going to be articulated, and in the performance areas and indicators, including the targets, I think they are going to be clearly spelled out in this, so that when we play our oversight as the portfolio committee, we must know exactly what are we monitoring. So they must account for what they've tabled before this committee. So with those few words, I wish to welcome Honorable Steyn, because Honorable Steyn was not amongst us. I welcomed them last week, those who were in the ad hoc committee. But most unfortunately, he was unable to be with us. He was admitted in the hospital. So he is back with us today. Honorable Steyn, you are welcome. We were missing you in this committee. With those few words, thank you very much. I'm going to hand over to Mr. Davandu to lead the team. My whip is coming in. My whip, I've already apologized for myself and you too. Otherwise, we are just starting the meeting. The members were so kind to wait for the Pelican people, Pelican Park people. So you are welcome. Let's just get one minute round of introducing ourselves. Thank you. Can you start there?
Good morning. I'm Zoleka Sokopo. I work in the Department of Human Settlement. I'm the Chief Director for Research there.
Good morning. Anton Morrison, National Department of Human Settlement.
Mvonge Sabantu, Acting DG, National Department of Human Settlement.
Good morning, Chair. Honorable members, my name is Julie Byer, National Department of Human Settlement, Chief Director for Priority Project. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Martin Mapisa. I'm responsible for policy and research in the Department of Human Settlement. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Nelly Letfeloniani, Deputy Director General for Corporate Services.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Kaba Kabagambe. I'm from the Brand Service Delivery Support.
Good morning. My name is Tamim Portulo. I'm the Chief Director of National Sanitation Program. I've just been transferred from the Department of Water Affairs to the Department of Human Settlement to manage the National Sanitation Program.
Good morning. My name is Monwabi Simeklin. I'm responsible for capacity development in the Department of Human Settlement.
Morning, Honorable Members. My name is Maurice Hichi from Budget Management within the Department of Human Settlements.
Good morning. My name is Sonali Machasi. I'm from the Chief Directorate Funds Management, responsible for financial management and budget.
Milile Khaba, Assistant to the DG.
Nomsa Dambuza.
Colleagues of Pasia Committee Secretary.
Morning, everybody. My name is Mduwa Bandu, Joel Machoba, member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Gloria Borman, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Butch Stein, and Chairperson, thank you for the welcome.
Mark Conjobe, member of the committee.
Kazami Labota, member of the committee.
Leanne Johnson, E News.
Roger Kaufman, I'm an economist and a visiting scholar at Emory.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Acting Deputy.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honourable Bowman,
can I just ask? I see that we also should have somebody from the National Treasury. Are they coming in later, or not?
Okay. No, that one. They are not going to be with us today. They are having another commitment, but they indicated that they could be with us on Friday, or I can give them another date. We'll discuss that amongst ourselves after this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe let me preface this by saying we are honored to know the real name of the member. Remember, Mr. Machoba. It gives us a very good context. He belongs to the people. Thank you very much, Chair. Let me confirm that following Friday's discussions, we had given the committee a draft of our pre-final draft of our strategic plan. I think valuable inputs were received. We are editing it to rather address some of those issues and of emphasis that the committee suggested yesterday, on Friday. Today, Chair, we will be concentrating on the key aspects that are outlined in the budget documentation for the department. Vote 30, which starts on page 619 of the big book. Obviously, I will seek not to repeat as many of the things that we went into detail last week on, and perhaps we could then be in a position to concentrate on the numbers and be able to get a sense of the committee's concerns with regard and input with regard to that. Chair, I will confirm as outlined in the document the aim of the department of human settlements, which is to determine, finance, promote, coordinate, communicate, and monitor the implementation of housing and sanitation policies and programs. We already acknowledge the transfer of a function relating to sanitation in this financial year. The strategic overview, I think, Chair, I did make a detailed presentation with regard to this, but I may just quickly run through this as a reminder of the context in which we are operating, which is categorized by rapid urbanization and migration, largely rural to urban, population growth, household formations and diminishing size. And I think and therefore, as the sizes are diminishing, then there are more households, and to respond to the constitution, that means the demand isn't reducing that much. As a result of that urbanization, largely around the major cities where there is economic activity, there is a growth of informal settlements, lack of access to basic services, related also to the next, to the informality, and the issue of unbalanced property markets that we continue to deal with, sometimes unsustainable development choices, which we may have made, sometimes forced to make from time to time. I think in respond in the context of human settlements, we are responding to try to ensure that we correct those kinds of situations. The context and the extent of the problem, 12.5 million households in South Africa, largely residing in formal settlements of a particular character, which includes formally proclaimed townships, generally with formal houses, surveyed, packed, formally planned layouts and geotech, access to one or more formal basic services supplies, which is what is ideally what is required.
I would like the lady from April to have a seat here so that you are able to take notes.
The next number being informal freestanding settlements, settlements on tribal or communal lands, and those that are in farm areas. Chair, we have stated what is generally the acceptable number of what remains as basic services for various services. I think the nature of our urbanization and demographic trends points to a situation of dual citizenship of many households, some of which then become are at the center of some of the challenges we have. Or, for example, in developing informal settlements, you would then have people who probably may have access some assistance from government elsewhere, but because they are in a particular area and you have to develop that area, you find them there and you are faced with the situation as to what to do with them and all those kinds of things, and therefore what kinds of choices we are seeking to put in place to address those things. And we note that migration to urban areas largely is increasingly becoming semi-permanent. I made an example of many people around here, including the speaker, about the dual citizenship, the dual residence that we find. But largely, you may not find the speaker in Gauteng around December. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure many of the members present here, in some cases. we note that this situation, this phenomenon is also irreversible. It is growing, but it requires, in the context of human settlement, the proper and ability to manage properly so that the choice of people or the reduction in its escalation is achieved. There's been generally, I think we had a slide we showed in December that shows that over the decades, there has largely been consolidation around the same area, which largely are characterized as those areas of economic attraction, that where there's been economic growth, and largely urban in nature. We showed that graph that showed the concentration, which kept on growing, irrespective of which year. But there's been that kind of consolidation over the period. As we all know, largely informal settlements are addressless, which is another cycle in the residence exclusion. Because if people with other addresses are unable to access very critical services, even access to banking services, loans, etc., etc., and these issues. I think that, therefore, the program will benefit from going forward.
I think we know what are the macro conditions that are impacting on human settlements. The rapid administration which I have already alluded to. But I think the one of the contributors seems to be in the arena of economic activity and largely the fact that we have structural unemployment and therefore that informality which I have already indicated. I think in the last couple of years, certainly we have seen a situation where there's been this economic downturn, which is largely a global problem. But I think the impact on us, coupled with almost by coincidence, with the better regulation of the banking industry and the credit access, we've seen the two factors contributing to diminishing access to housing finance. We've not been able to isolate what is the contribution of one over the other. Certainly when the downturn changes, you may get a sense of that, but they almost exist almost at the same time. And therefore the impact is that we are seeing more households falling in the subsidy income band. We also are challenged with the issue of diminishing bulk infrastructure spare capacity as you start to grow the households and deliver. There's a large burden on the existing infrastructure, both in terms of maintenance as well as creating additional infrastructure. Social and geographical disparities, the issue of input costs, construction material and capacity generally, from the sector that helps us in construction, have continued to bedevil the program. We are hopeful that with the 2010 pressures around 2010, we could be able to harness some of that capacity that may be released from those infrastructure programs. But I think we have to accept that we live in a global economy. Most of the larger companies have access here and elsewhere, and therefore our engagements through the structure that we put must be able to understand those things that will keep those people partnering with the emerging contractors and continue to provide support to our program. The issue of built environment governance network, the fact that we have all of these things dispersed across government in various and then across the sphere. We always have to keep to the issue of keep our eyes to the issue of sustainability generally, and the issues that may impact on it, the phenomenon of climate change and related disaster issues that from time to time. Okay. I think I did present these pillars before, Chair. I will jump that. Outcome from the outcome based approach, we have, as outlined in the President's speech last week, a few weeks ago, the following have been chosen as the key areas on which we will be measured as a department. Acceleration of upgrading of informal settlements with a target to deal with at least 500,000 households by 2014 in those key areas where there is the largest pressure. Upscaling of development of affordable rental housing stock, a program that has an urban focus. When we did these numbers, we did projections based on what the current numbers are. The plans that will be that are submitted from provinces then are aimed at trying to deal with this with this particular target, so that we are able to deal with the backlog in those areas. The land assembly for human settlements, utilizing our partners who have access to and control of land. Residual requirement, as indicated to us, which would then be assembled to all of this, including the use of the instrument that the portfolio committee put in place for us, which is the Housing Development Agency. The National Settlement Infrastructure Development, we want to accelerate the provision and upgrading of the bulk infrastructure network in partnership with the department responsible, such as COCTA and the municipality, on that, because you will not be able to deliver settlements in the context of what we want if these issues are not addressed appropriately. Then the financing of the increase in the facilitation of the increased supply of affordable housing finance to accommodate those people who are currently left out of the housing credit access, generally because they earn too little to qualify for a normal bank mortgage, but do not qualify in terms of our program. We must say, Chair, that one needs to understand this in the context that this is not the only option available to those people. As we accelerate rental, those who choose the rental option, affordable rental, in those areas, particularly because it is in the areas where they are not necessarily planning to settle permanently, then they would be having that access. And those who are anticipating new entrants into the market, like the young couples, etc., also have an opportunity, because most of them would be coming out of the education sector. And those professionals, those people who are in the, such as in the public sector, teachers and whoever, who are in this category, have those options. When they want to then access credit, if their credit worthiness is okay, we're looking at facilitating a risk-sharing mechanism with the banks to ensure that that is dealt with. The minister will make a concrete announcement during this budget speech with regard to the details on this matter, except to say that at the moment we are talking with the partners in the industry that will provide assistance to us. The ultimate
process with regard to then work out with every one of the contributors to the human settlement arrangement to enter into service delivery agreements that they commit to in terms of contributing towards us achieving those directives. And this is one of the most significant coordinating mechanism that probably we may have reached in the reforms to the way in which we do business. It has its own challenges, but it is in our view going to help in creating the focus to the key issues. And as we start with this, it may then be extended to the rest of the program and make sure that we are able to deliver our objectives. We are currently in discussions with the President. In fact, we've had the discussions regarding the full process now on this matter. We had recently, on Thursday last week, met with the Treasurer official, and we've got now a full program, because we also proposed from our sector, as we identified that we are an intergovernmental, our delivery is so dependent on a multitude of intergovernmental partners, and some of which may not be in government. So we need to make sure that we are clear about that process, and that has been cleared, and I think we will be on target to meet the expectation for the first draft for the delivery agreement by end of April. Check. Just as a discussion that we had with President, we had our own workshop for the delivery of our outcomes on sustainable human settlements and better quality of household livelihood, where we then were dealing with the key areas that we'll be looking at. Chair, the President did confirm to us that we must recognize that there are many players in the human settlements arena that need to be to be harnessed to contribute their role. They also confirmed that not all of them should be having the same level of contribution. There are those who are very key to the delivery of this of the outcome, and that those who are supportive to that. And we need to understand those and make sure that we structure them appropriately. That has been confirmed, Chair. So there are others. We are a convener of this delivery forum. Where you see DG Human Settlement is at the technical level, it's a minister at the political level. And then core members, being ourselves, COPTA, and then those departments which are custodians of constitutional in terms of the mandate for delivering various aspects of the services. And then obviously National Treasury, DPW, rural development and land reform, because of their particular functions in relationship to, for example, our rural programs. These structures are expected to be will be replicated at the provincial level appropriately, although then those provinces those partners at the provincial level that are critical will then commit themselves specifically with regard to their own issues. In the document, Chair, as we anticipated, we did our own projections with regard to service delivery issues. Most of them have now changed based on the plans that are being finalized by provinces to reflect these latest developments. But we do believe that combined with the old business that is already in process based on old plans, we will still largely exceed 200,000 units. This may be tweaked and changed by the time we look at the plans and the progress media, but those are the targets we were putting. For example, under Randall, we will then upscale this in line with the target. But we have to recognize what is on budget now, and then when we have the discussions media, we will upscale those numbers. Then I come to the programs themselves as outlined in the document. Program 1 administration remains with the purpose of providing strategic leadership and administrative and management support services to the department. Program 2, which is housing policy research and monitoring, remains with the purpose of developing and promoting human settlements and housing policies that are supported by a responsive research agenda. The second part being to monitor and assess the implementation, performance, and impact of national housing policies and programs. Program 3, housing planning and delivery support, which will take us to support the implementation and delivery, building of the capacity and the liaison and communication with stakeholders for effective housing and human settlement programs. It will also manage the coordination and monitoring of the implementation of priority projects with regard to the priority projects and the sanitation program. That is at the moment where the sanitation program is located. The housing development finance largely houses the financial management and oversight over the grant, and also manages the activities under the Home Loans and Mortgage Disclosure Act. Program 5 is the program that deals with strategic relations and governance, where the issue of coordinating the department's mandate within the intergovernmental relations framework, management of the international relations, and the promotion of good governance practices within the department and its public entities, and then that's where the HSS is also located, to provide timely and integrated business information to the department with regard to, amongst other things, the performance of the provinces in their various programs. Chair, this is the summary of the allocations, the program, and the growth from previously published numbers. If you look at the adjusted appropriation in the current year, program one, from the current figure of 167 million, increases to 176 in 2010-11, 180 to 190, a modest increase. I'll come back to that when we deal with the program. The biggest program continues to be housing development finance, which largely includes the transfers to institutions and the conditional grant to provinces. Program three, housing planning and delivery support, currently 250, goes to 206 million, 173, 183. Over the medium term, and these are specific projects that come to an end as we start to the coming year. Strategic relations grows from 164 to 174, 180, and 187 over the entire period. And this is the classification according to the major economic. Compensation of employees, which is salary-related cost, from the current adjusted appropriation of 217 million to 290 to 313 to 228 over the MTF. Goods and services, 419 reduced to 209, and then grows modestly over the accommodating inflation impact. Transfers and subsidies, that means transfers to institutions as well as to provinces, and then for subsidies, 13.3 billion currently, 16.2 billion next year, 18.4 the following year, 19.6 the last year of the coming MTF. Payments for capital acquisitions, 64.094. Current year. This includes comparative numbers that have been transferred from Water Affairs, previous Water Affairs, in relationship to the specialty project under the examination program. Otherwise, previously, we would have had a very small number here that reflects only those acquisitions that relate to office equipment and support, etc., etc. But now included what is in the sanitation program over the coming year period. Chair, I've already dealt with this. As I said, the expense increases from 14 billion to 19 billion in 2012-13, largely driven by the Human Settlement Development Grant from 12.6 billion. We anticipate quite a lot of reforms going forward as we seek to find the most appropriate and negotiate with the other sector departments around how we better integrate or even consolidate the various grants. But those I cannot even preempt. It is our intention to ensure that we push for a better and if anything, a consolidated service delivery arrangement around the finances. We increased, we received an additional $1 billion on the Human Settlement Development Grant in 2012-13, $1.2 billion over the MTF period for the site water and sanitation infrastructure for households, largely in rural areas, $133.8 million in 2010 for disaster relief. We had in KwaZulu-Natal. some of those projects that are, that were identified. In fact, this thing seems to continue. We started this pilot in conjunction with Treasury. I think there were also DPLG people at the time to pilot how, whether or not we should not have a specific grant to deal with disasters going forward. I think from the lessons in this particular one, we want to make a case that, in fact, that is desirable, so that it is not only in one province, but also addresses those other provinces where this situation prevails. So you may see that reform going forward over the NTF. Program 1 generally houses the executive support to the DG's office, internal audit, risk management, and the special investigations, the human resource management, the corporate services, and the information technology system, and lastly, the legal services subgroup. These are the people who largely are supportive to the implementation of programs, with the exception of internal audit and risk management special investigation, which also has an impact on activities taking place at the various spheres and implementing agencies. This is how the money has been split. I think Program 1 generally is pretty standard with regard to every department, and therefore we will not, as I indicated, we grow from 167 to 176 and then 190 by the end of the coming MTF, with the largest cost driver being corporate services and the management support in this program. Expenditure is expected to increase, as I indicated, from 167.8 million to 190.9 million at an average annual rate of 4.4% over the period. Largely, the increases are inflation related. Then we come to Program 2, which is the start of what you call line functions. Sub-program of line management is a generic one. Control, the program management control over this program, reflecting the expenditure related to the program manager, which is the DDC responsible for this program. Then there is a sub-program policy development, which is responsible for the creation of human settlements and housing policies. And also it provides policy formulation and interpretation assistance. From time to time, provinces inquire from national how to deal with matters under specific conditions, and this is the program that I use with that interpretation. Over the NPF, we also want them to be proactive, because now we've got a new code, they must go and sell the code to each province and to the practitioners, working with the capacity building program. It also maintains the National Housing Code, which contains all the current human settlement housing policies and programs. Research initiates, undertakes, and manages responsive research on integrated human settlements. Monitoring and evaluation monitors and evaluates and assess the implementation, performance, and impact of national housing policies and programs. This is how the funding in this program is split. Chair, this is the smallest of our programs, and one would anticipate, it's been largely stable or reducing over the years, with the understanding that strategically, most of our programs and sort of most of the policies are there. The work that is required under this program is to maintain those policies, respond to implementation challenges, and maybe better research. So you may find that we, over time, we're now going to rebalance it so that it deals and recognizes the environment in which we are operating. We want to have growth in other programs that relate to service delivery related areas, and largely our monitoring and evaluation activities and programs, recognizing that there are other role players such as NHPRC that must take a role in those arenas. The split, I think, under this program, the big cost drivers salaries and goods and services. There are no transfers. They just want some, as you will see, capital acquisitions only relate to those aspects that are about replacing obsolete computers, office furniture, etc. And there's nothing bigger except for those areas. Program 3, again, management is a generic one that deals with the program manager control. Implementation support provides support to provinces and municipalities to implement housing management settlement projects and upgrade informal settlements. What we provide out of this, under this, is when there is a real problem in the province, like dealing with unblocking of project of the blocked projects, etc., etc. These are the people who should be able to go and provide that support, guidance, and assistance to the various programs. Obviously, they will then, their program is structured so as to support the priority areas that we're implementing. The rental housing and people's housing process manages the implementation of the social and rental housing programs and the people's housing process. Stakeholder mobilization manages the relations and mobilizes and collaborates with stakeholders in the non-governmental sector. This is where we're managing our relationships with various partners, both inside and outside government, but largely concentrating on those outside of government. Capacity development builds capacity for human, for housing administration, obviously for sanitation as well, and delivering municipalities and provinces and promote sustainable housing delivery and community empowerment issues. The expenditure in this program grows from 72.2 million. I think I went back. The program drops from 250, as I indicated, to 206, 173. And 183 million. We also see a decrease in goods and services from 135 to 83 over the period, which largely reflects the pressures we had with regard to cost cutting. The decrease is also due to the following fines provided for once of special project support in 2009-10, which is a program that has been put in place to respond to specific requirements going forward. Also, I think we also imported figures from the water affairs, as I indicated. And those figures reflect also specific decreases that relate to projects that may not be continuing over the MTF from water affairs. However, also you will see in the next program there are specific allocations that relate to also the new allocations around that under conditional for the sanitation program. Decrease on consultants and professional services from 23.6 million to 12.5 million due to the cost saving measures, and increasing, anticipated increase in in-house capacity that we want to do. So we want to increase the capacity in-house and also see a reflection of the interest in outsourcing services that relate to that. Housing development and finance deals with the financial and funds management, which provides overall financial and grant management services, including financial support, internal control, supply chain, and budget management, as well as the grant management services and system support. This sub-program is the sub-program that manages all the requirements under the Division of Revenue Act passed by Parliament with regard to the conditional grant transfer, the reports that provinces must submit over time, the preparation of those reports to the minister with regard to the performance of provinces, and then also manages the transversal systems that we houses the payments for our contribution to payments regarding transversal systems of the department. Also, we have our own housing transversal system that deals with all business which is being phased out, called the data system, which also houses some of the properties that still remain owned by the various provinces from old business, which are also being disposed of under the enhanced discount benefit scheme. Then the grant, the housing equity manages the activities related to the Office of Disclosure. It also looks at our engagements and housing aspects of the financial services charter, mobilizing and promoting and looking at the performance of investment opportunities for housing development. This is the program, sub-program, that is at the center of the engagements with regard to the risk from ground sharing mechanisms that I'm sure the minister will articulate himself on later with regard to how we want to facilitate lending for housing development purposes. Then the issue of the reports, for example, that are now submitted by financial institutions on their lending practices under the Home Loans and Mortgage Disclosure Act are also managed under this program. Then there's a sub program which is about the contribution to housing institutions, which reflects funds that are transferred on the basis of a public entity meeting the governance and the financial management requirements stipulated in the BFMA Act for those institutions that are supported from the budget of the national department. Then there's a new grant called Rural Households Infrastructure Grant, which is coming with the sanitation program. I think I related to it when I was discussing in program four, the actual management. This is the grant that will be assisting us in dealing with largely water and sanitation solutions as relate to the delivery of the sanitation program, with particular concentration on the rural areas as I indicated. Those are the numbers, Chair, split, with the biggest cost driver being the Human Settlement Development Grant, and then the Rural Household Infrastructure Grant over the NDF. It's a new grant. It wasn't there in sanitation under water affairs, but then there are specific grants that were allocated for a limited period, which are now also being discontinued because they've reached their end period. They were meant to specifically address the targets that were set with regard to specific issues, and we'll deal with that through the program manager for details. As I indicated, Chair, the housing disaster relief grant, which was allocated for the first time last year, deals particularly with that issue of in case of that. As I say, in the discussions for 2011 onwards, we are taking lessons from this, going to make very firm proposals for a proper dedicated funding for this on the basis that they are planned appropriately with Treasury. Chair, these are the areas. As you can see, the big cost driver is transfers and subsidies, and then followed by compensation of employees, and then goods and services. Payments for capital assets, they relate to what we anticipate to be coming out of largely the rural household infrastructure grant, because we have categorized capital grants to households as the sanitation program provides. Then small allocations for the normal replacement of computers. I think that's about 849 for the staff to support. Equipment that is used by the support staff under this program. From an analytical review perspective, the expenditure, as we noted, increases to 19 billion at an average of 12.4% from the current level of expenditure. It is also expected to increase to 17 billion in 2012. If I go back there so that we can see. It grows from 12.9 billion in the adjusted budget as we speak to 15.4 in the first year of the coming MTF, with all of those adjustments and then the introduction of the new program in the first year. Then it grows to 17.4 billion in 2011-12, 18.178 in 2012-13. Then we'll go to Program 5, Strategic Relations and Governance. Sub-program management, generic sub-program. The sub-programs under this largely are Management Information Service, which manages the development and implementation of the integrated business solution and data and information and provide knowledge services relating to the sector. It's your all the issues that relate to information management in the department, including the program used to manage the subsidies in provinces, which is HSR. We also have intergovernmental relations and international relations, which facilitate the department's participation in and management of international and intergovernmental relations. It deals with international relations, also deals with intergovernmental relations. The main project in this program is the management, for example, of the accreditation program as municipalities those applications to provinces, and we guide them. We've got a task team that is doing the assessment of whether or not those municipalities meet the criteria for accreditation at the various levels, and the team is busy, as we speak, doing that. And that is linked to the reform that has been prioritized with regard to assignment of the function as required in terms of constitution and the Housing Act to those municipalities on a progressive basis as they begin to be able to address their ability to deliver on the program. So it's not a blanket assignment to all municipalities, it is only for those municipalities, largely targeting the metros because to the extent that they have the capacity that they can demonstrate, which they have, some of them have demonstrated, to deliver housing, human settlement, on the human settlement program. Then we also house the communication program, which manages the communication and public relations with regard to the department's activities. The housing entities and governance oversight, the chief directorate that provides the oversight and management of housing institutions, which manages the assessment of quarterly performances of the housing institutions against their targets and money, whether there's policy alignment and legislative and regulatory compliance of each of those institutions. Strategic management is an internal, it's a sub-program that manages overall organizational planning in the organization and supports strategic management and operations of the department. As we sign performance agreements for our program, we report on a quarterly basis on how those have been achieved, and this program assesses and helps the accounting officer and the minister in saying that program performed that well and that other program did not perform with regard to those. Transformation sub-program develops and manages the transformation program in compliance with the national policy framework and international human rights directives. Then contributions are meant for housing institutions and Habitat Foundation, which supports our, as a contribution by the country to the United Nations Human Settlements Program. That is how the various sub-programs funding looks like. The biggest cost driver at a sub-program level is your management information services, followed by communications, followed by intergovernmental and international relations, and then housing institutions, strategic management. But the large part fall in the first, in the second sub-program to the fifth one. The budget, as we indicated, grows from 164.7 billion in the current year to 174.4 billion to 180 and 187 over MTF, which is a modest increase that accommodates anticipated inflationary growth. Obviously recognizing some areas where there would be less activities than in other areas. The contributions, as I indicated, that will reflect relates largely to the, our contribution to UN Habitat. From an economic classification, in terms of GFS, the biggest cost driver is service, is goods and services, followed by salaries. In fact, the two constitute almost 99% of the sub-program. And capital acquisition, it's only, again, assets to support where we are replacing obsolete assets for support to the staff complements to the department, including acquisition for new people, because there are also vacancies that are going to be filled going forward. Chair, if we look at to date, end of January, we do not have the February figures from provincial expenditure. We are sitting at the moment at 86% of the total funds available, with the various provinces performance ranging from 71% to 96%. So none of the provinces except for where you have 71% Western Cape, are anticipating major underspending level at the end of the year. As you will see, Chair, the first column, if I can extend it, the first column reflects the funds that are available for each of the provinces. Eastern Cape, for example, gets 1.3 billion this year. Free State, 962 million. Gauteng, 3.2 billion. KwaZulu Natal, 2 billion. Limpopo, 996 million. Mpumalanga, 795 million. Northern Cape, 325 million. Northwest, 1.1 billion. Western Cape, 1.5 billion. To date, they are sitting at, out of the 1.3 billion of Eastern Cape, they have spent 1.1 billion. Out of the 962 billion for Free State, they have spent 892 billion. Out of the 3.187 billion for Gauteng, they are now sitting at 3.064 billion. Certainly for Gauteng, they could have been far more. They are limited by resources, and we are seeking to address what may appear to be a very high risk, because I think they are planning in the past meant a lot of over commitment based on what they anticipated and provincial contributions which did not arise, materialize, and they committed with a lot of. I think you will have heard in the newspapers some of the issues where some of the contractors are complaining of non-payments, etc. Yeah. We are seeking to get some relief as well to them going forward. But I think the permanent solution is to manage that over commitment in line with the resources that are available. KwaZulu Natal, 2.1 billion, they are sitting at 1.7 billion as we speak. Limpopo, of the 996, they are now at 893. Mpumalanga, 795, they are at 613. Northern Cape, 325 at 298. Northwest, 1.1, they are now at 928. Western Cape, of their 1.6 billion, they are now at 1.1 billion. As I say, they are probably the lowest from a spending perspective. And the contributing factor has largely been the transition with regard to jubilation and some of the disputes that have occurred. Which are likely being resolved. There is likely going to be some amount not completed with regard to those contracts related to those districts. They likely are around M2 mainly. But they did request some parliaments, declared some possible understanding. We were seeking to have that amount then to deal with their check. That is the issue of the promotion plan. That is the budget discussion.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Acting DG. I think now I have to give the opportunity to the members to engage with the department. And I hope the team is going to respond, because we cannot just bring people here and they're not going to respond. I hope they're going to respond to the question. The first member is Honorable Dane, to be followed by Honorable Lago De, to be followed by Honorable Machoba, to be followed by Honorable Bomme.
in that session. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. In both your opening remarks as well as the acting DG's, you made reference to the fact that this is, I think, the second time that this presentation has been made, and that the department has come here today to answer partly some of the questions members asked last week. So with that in mind, Chairperson, I hope you're going to give me some leeway to ask a little bit more questions than I ordinarily do. I'm going to take one bite at the cherry and reserve the opportunity to have another go, Chairperson. The first of all, I think it's a welcome change and addition to have somebody from specifically looking at sanitation in the Department of Human Settlements. Because as a committee and when we've been going about our oversight visits, it's been brought to our attention that even though in some provinces we may be advancing with the delivery of housing, we fall far short by simultaneously providing sanitation to our people. So I hope it's going to make a huge difference and have an impact on future delivery. Having said that, Chairperson, I want to start right at the beginning. And we talk in the very opening part of the presentation, there is talk about the statistics that guide us as to our strategic plan. Now, what I'd like to ask, because it appears to remain pretty much the same in terms of 12.5 million households, 1.2 million informal settlements, freestanding, etc. I'm questioning the validity of this information and how far back does it go? Because unless we're going to work with credible information, our strategy is going to be compromised. So if I can have some indication about how valid this current information is and whether it goes back to stats that was done, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And I do recognize that the acting DG made reference to the phenomenon of shifting targets. Now, unless we're going to keep that in mind as we go forward and not rely on stats that may be out of date, our strategy is going to come short. Then, Chairperson, I am on page 5, and I think I couldn't pick up the slide numbers here. And if I may, in that regard, just ask the department, it's nice to have fancy slides with beautiful pictures, but in many cases, in this particular one, we cannot read the last, but it coincides with the houses, the tree, that big black line across there. So if I may ask that future presentations, you know, they look at it and it's legible for us once it's printed out. But I'm a little bit concerned because in that slide, we talk about the upgrading of informal settlements, and there's now a target of 500,000. Now, Minister Sisulu, when she was the Minister of Human Settlements or Housing, indicated that we will eradicate informal settlements by 2014. Now it would appear that we've shifted the goalposts very subtle. There's been no statement by the Ministry that we're actually changing their target to less than half. Because if memory serves me, we've got more than over 1 million informal settlements. Now we're saying we're going to address 500,000 households by 2014. Then on page 6, Chairperson, there's an objective that I think this particular committee has driven and that we welcome, and that is to accommodate the sort of middle class earners who don't qualify for normal mortgages. Now, whilst we welcome that, and it is on a paper for this afternoon as well in terms of a question, I'd like for and I think the DG also indicated that the Minister will address it in his budget vote, but can you give us some indication of how the department is going to be, with the interaction with the banks? I mean, it's not an easy thing. We've heard it before with Servcon and others, and it hasn't been 100% successful. Just two more, Chair, for this round. On page 6, there's mention made of service delivery agreements. And I think the acting DG mentioned something about the end of April. Now, I want clarity there because it's nice to have service agreements, but we need a proper time frame in terms of when they will be concluded. Are they going to start at the end of April? When will they actually be concluded? And I hope that as a committee we will be privy to these service agreements in terms of what they actually contain, what is going to be done by whom within these agreements, because I think that is crucial to delivery going forward. And then I said one more for this round, Chairperson. There was the sanitation program. I got a little bit confused. At some point, the acting DG said that there was a transfer from Water Affairs already. And then somewhere down the line, and I've got it in one of my later questions, under sanitation, on page 19, under sanitation grant, there's actually zero. So surely the grant from Water Affairs should be indicated as a separate amount. It should be ring-fenced. It wasn't in the original housing budget. So I'm confused there. Whether this money must still come to the department, whether it's included in the 16 billion, but like I say, on page 19, there's zero amount against sanitation grant. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Dane, we have adopted a 3-minute time frame, but because you are recovering, Honourable Labute.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to welcome the presentation by Mr. Dlabantu. We appreciate it. But I've got a problem here on page 6. The Honourable Member touches this thing, but I want to know if on page 6, the objective to accommodate people whose salaries are too high to get government subsidies, but who earn too little to qualify for a normal bank mortgage. Does this apply to also to people in communal land or rural areas? And how do you plan to do this? Because in rural areas or communal lands, the bank also needs, those title deeds, which we don't have in rural areas. Then on page 19, there's a mention of housing disaster grant. I'm a little bit confused with this housing disaster relief grant, because in the past we used to have floods, and you'll find families of 8 or 10 members losing their houses, and the government will come and build only one-roomed house. So how do we plan to improve this, considering the fact that we have this high rate of incest and rape in our community? Then on page 20, okay, oh, this one is the same as this one. No, I'm covered. It's the same as this one. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is on page 11. That is the office accommodation. When we're in Eastern Cape, when we asked them about the accommodation, they were saying now that they are calling the buildings to belong to Padua. No, not to them. And then my question was to them. Are they paying rent to the public wealth, or what's going on to them? Because our concern is that the government usually renting their houses from the people who have got buildings. Whereas the government has got the land and also the buildings, which they are supposed to use. Is it just a question of renovating the buildings and then use them? That I just want to get them a clarity there. The second one is on page 19. I'm a little bit covered by my colleagues there. The problem is this cause. I don't know whether this grant, what's going on with this grant, because when we're doing an oversight, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, there were disasters which happened then, 1998. Nobody who cares about them. People are complaining that there was a disaster here in 1998. Up to now, we were still waiting. It goes down to your department. what's going on with this grant and all that. I want to go from this consultant fee now. I'm so happy that it's coming down now from 23 to 12, but it's still too much. Because you employ CFO. Want to find out the work she or he is supposed to do is outsourced to somebody else. If you can give me more clarity on that, you employ people with qualifications you need, but want to find out now the work is going to be done by somebody else. No, not somebody who is employed. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairman. Not you. Yeah, it's you.
Thank
you're the
you.
Last one.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's just so much that I would like to interrogate here, but also I will confine myself and then we'll take it a stage further. I also want to refer to the backlog. And we're talking about 2.2 million. Now, I asked this question last week, and I think now we want to actually flesh out so that we can exercise a proper monitoring role, oversight over this. And that is, I'm not too sure in the list that you give us here, where you give us the number of housing units of roughly 220,000. It seems to me that we are short. What I don't have is where we've got the figures for the previous years and whether those targets were met in those years or whether we were short on those targets. So I think we need to be able to measure these things. And what I think we need to have is a better breakdown of specifically which provinces are going, and how many units per province, and the cost of that, so that we can see that the money is matching up with the units that we're talking about. And then we can have a clear oversight over that. The same thing applies to the 100,000 units we're talking about in the rental stock. Because otherwise we just keep falling behind, Chairperson, and I can't see us. At the moment we're talking about 670,000 units in housing units, and we've got a backlog of 2.2 million. That obviously includes the rental stock. I'm not sure about that, but I think it does. And here in rental stock we're talking about 15,000, according to the service delivery indicators you've got on page 8. The other thing is the 50,000 RDP houses that we talk about for rectification. I don't see any indication here of a plan and a breakdown of those units, Chair, so that we can begin to monitor that. I think that's of great concern to us, that we don't drag on forever with the rectification program. I think we need a proper breakdown of that. And the time and the cost put to that so that we can see the money is matching and that we don't talk nonsense as far as the money goes. Chair, do you want me to stop or can I carry on? Can I carry on? Okay, thank you. All right, and then when we talk about the basic services on page 3, I also want to refer to that. It's the same sort of story. I think we now, as a committee, need to start to put time frames and costs to the backlogs that we've got, and that the same applies here with your basic services, where we've got the remaining needs in water, sanitation, electricity, so that we can break it down and say, all right, over this time period, we've got the money, are we delivering, where are we delivering, so that we've got something specific to work to. You may stop me when you want to, Chair. I want to go on to page 8, the last one, and I'll get another chance. All right. I just want to try to understand. We've had a lot of discussion about beneficiary lists, and at what stage do we start to tie up the beneficiary list with the number of units that we're expecting to deliver? Because as I mentioned last week, we're already a year down the line in our term. So we should begin to have our lists all in order for beneficiaries related to the number of units that we are delivering. And I think we need to get some idea of that. You want me to stop, Chair?
Yes. Let me just can you respond that response from the team?
Yes, thank you. I'll start with the questions by Honorable Dean. I think the first one is just a comment around the change and sanitation involvement. I think I will not respond to that. I think we may engage with that program. We ourselves are beginning to conclude our familiarization with it, and have therefore the ability to direct it and align it adequately with our program. I think that is what we are undertaking to ensure that we are able to achieve that. And to a large extent, given that it is in the department, we will be able to deal with that. May I also, I think there is a reference to the statistics. This is where are the updated 2007, what is it, household survey?
What?
October. Yeah. Sorry? Is it 2007? Yeah. I don't know. We have to use the official figures. Obviously. I do indicate that you from time to time, as you do the evaluation and you ask yourself how far are you do see these shifts and the dynamics around the changing nature of this demand. But I think we have to use those statistics. We are using them, and when they are updated, we'll use the updated figures. And we'll then take a view as to how they correlate or do not correlate with what we had anticipated. Because when you do projections, you are always at a disadvantage than when you are doing an evaluation and analysis of what has already been done. That talk about hindsight being an exact, what is it? Hindsight being an exact science, and the other one being an economist for science. Chair, I think you, recognizing these dynamics, and these are dynamics about how settlements are and some of these demographics that generally are not themselves planned but are responses to realities on the ground. One has to recognize that our informal settlement program, and you must learn from what the evaluations are doing, may need to change from time to time in terms of how you approach it, rather than trying to do it everything and end up with half with inadequate delivery in terms of the totality. At the moment, we are looking at focusing and ensuring that you are providing a full suite of solutions to those areas that you have achieved, so that you don't go back to them one way or the other. You therefore set a proper target, and I think this has been started to be communicated, the State of the Nation address. I'm sure nothing can be bigger than that in terms of announcements. It does reflect that then when we deal with this, linked to the next question of the delivery agreement, is that then we will not only go there and try to deliver that which housing
was able to deliver and leave, and then the rest you discover later that nothing else is happening with regard to the other people. But rather to say, bring everybody and make sure that when they are there, they deliver, they provide, they're able to provide the full suite and of the services and requirements that are there. Well, that effectively you can interpret it to having that, and that's still within your certainly from an international perspective, you're still within the targets that I expected. But I think quality of the totality of the settlements is what we will achieve in terms of the outcomes themselves. As I indicated, I think I will not go into detail with regard to the affordable, the discussions. I mean, when you are in discussions and negotiations, the last thing you do is to go out and say, this is what is happening. We want to be able to, what we have managed to do is to communicate a message that says, we must be creative, we must be flexible, we must be seeking to find the right solution that balances the objectives of those that will be providing credit as well as that of government. And in that regard, I may relate to the question that has been asked with regard to whether this will cover people in rural and communal areas. Well, the program itself is not excluding that, but remember the exclusion with regard to that has nothing to do with the qualification criteria. Where banks can give, because sometimes banks are beginning to develop from some products that provide for security other than what is normally your mortgaging the land and everything else, pension backed and other. In such situations, their security is not the house itself, it is something else. So if, for example, a teacher who has been working for 20 years can be able to provide out of the pension security arrangement sufficient value for a bank, assuming that person is credit worthy, then the bank, in fact, they are already beginning to do that. They will grant it not on the basis of the value of the house, but on the basis of the security that they do. So we're saying, those kinds of creative arrangements need to be increased to look at what are the other options that are available with regard to that. And I will not get into what we... But to say that the minister will then make a pronouncement with regard to that. We're talking to banks mindful of and using the experience of the past 15 years. We know where we failed. We're seeking to make sure that we do not... fall on the same pitfall. I think there's always been very, certainly in the last five years, there's been a good progress with regard to creating trust between the two, government and the banking industry with regard to this. Where we may have failed is because of market operations, things that shift, like prices of houses and the growth in salaries remaining static. And these are the things then that we are beginning to say, you have to address them too. Yeah. Looking at FLISP, what are the possibilities around FLISP, the finance linked individual housing subsidy? What are the mechanisms you can put in place with regard to that so that that deposit is accessible by these people who should be getting affordable housing better than they have been, because there's been a very low uptake of that program in the past. I did indicate that the president set a target for the delivery agreements for April. It means almost close to 24 hours working by ourselves with our sector departments, partner departments. As I indicated, on the 12th we started in human cells. We didn't wait after the state president has made the announcement for weeks. We started to say we started to map out the process so that we can meet that target. I do believe that with the minister pushing us in the manner that he is, we will achieve our part. We will come with a delivery agreement with commitments from the sector department. Certainly, if the workshop was anything to go by, there was an enthusiasm, a variety of people with regard to how they themselves will then clean up their own plans and make sure that they are aligned with our program. So, Chair, let us accept that we have to learn from these changes, and certainly we can evaluate them later. But I think this is an innovation that has that stands to make a remarkable change from the past, particularly because all of us were concerned around the taking of responsibility with regard to coordination of delivery, including that planning. Because if you can't, it is difficult to coordinate implementation when it is not done from a planning perspective. And I think that is what we are beginning to achieve now. The housing disaster relief grant, I indicated, in the past, what we did was, in the program, we provide for what was called emergency housing. In the grant, it's still there. With Treasury, we argued about the extent, because we have to accept that disaster in general, with regard to all of that aspect, is located in a particular way in government. It is in Department of COC. But there were always those, and I think it is the principle we also extracted from the tone of the Hoedboom ruling, that you can't wait for somebody else if you have a particular mandate to deal with shelter in situations of emergency of that nature. So we needed to develop a program that we did. That program was to be financed as a percentage and when it occurs, as a percentage of the grant that we allocate to each province. I think it was up to 3%. So at first it was up to 0.5%, then it was increased to 3%, and then later it changed to 5%. What we are now doing, we're saying no, because of our experience with regard to how some of these cases have been missed out. It may be proper that we do not only provide, because sometimes we provide that interim solution, tents and everything, so it's shared. But that's supposed to be very, very short term. That then you must then plan for the actual correction of that situation programmatically. In case that as a start, we then said, let us have a dedicated funding that deals with those things that we have found, and therefore you are able to hire the people to work out what exactly is required and what units are to be delivered. And that's outside of the grant, because sometimes you are replacing something that government has already delivered, or the people may have provided for themselves. And therefore, to say we want to test whether this would work better than just providing 5% in a time when the emergency occurs, the province has run out of money to deal with that particular issue. And I think the lessons we're learning with the KZN are helping us to say, no, we must create a dedicated fund for emergency housing with its own rules and expectations, so that it deals with all of the past emergencies that may have been identified and programmatize them properly under that program. That's what we're learning from the KZN. As I'm saying, we want to, over time, to then go back and say, this fund must then be dedicated to deal with shelter emergency requirements, and it must be able to resolve all of the outstanding ones on a dedicated basis, so that we don't, when those people are hit the second time by the same storms and disasters, they are not more vulnerable, they are not rendered vulnerable. I think in the reference to when we look at that page 19 on the rural house on the housing sanitation grant, what we have is a grant that was in place, that is currently in place, in fact is being remanded now under the auspices of the Department of Water Affairs, because that's where the sanitation was. going forward, that item called rural household infrastructure development is largely meant for the sanitation. Maybe we will have to change the wording so that it does create that, because it is in that grant was meant for, it was given to Water Access at the time with a specific time frame, specific targets, and it was linked to the targets that were set with regard to that. We will look at the evaluation of how far we went with those targets. But we are now putting this rural household infrastructure development grant, which is largely about our contribution towards resolving the sanitation and to some extent the related water issues around sanitation. And that is, that grant comes with sanitation. It is a new thing, it's not a continuation. That's why we've put it differently, so that it becomes clear this program is not going to largely to also be in terms of what why, but it will be in terms of what we are putting with regard to the program. So it is a grant, the first allocation of 100 million is for this year to deal with what is known, and then it is increasing to 250 and 750, and it will go beyond just dealing with your backlog issues, but also ensuring that from an infrastructure perspective, we are able to provide a proper solution for sanitation. So that is a sanitation thing going forward. It's not the same. We're trying to separate it. Maybe in terms of the madam, the wedding, we may then have to find a way in which we show to everybody that it is largely about dealing with that problem. That backlog of 2.2 million. 2.2 million. I think I have addressed it. It's also in terms of the statistics, but we categorize. I think the total backlog is recognizing the different types of conditions of inadequate housing, of which 1.2 relates to informal settlements as were counted. When they are next counted, we might find a different figure. I don't know. But that's the source of that. With regard to the rectification program, I think we have not dealt with in this presentation with every program that is implemented through provinces. Chair, if it is possible, we could, I understand the portfolio committee will be having hearings with provinces, but we can make a consolidated presentation after we receive the final plan from provinces. We've got a preliminary indication, but it's still preliminary. They need to certify it, and then but we can do a consolidated national delivery plan out of the grant that will reflect the targets of each of the provinces with regard to each of the targets of the instruments that they are using for delivery. That we can do, because we are finalizing that consolidation of that information with regard to them. I didn't come with that today. In that regard, we'll be able to see what is planned under informal settlement, what is planned under rectification, and in that regard, it will have been actually targeted to specific projects in each of those provinces. And secondly, you will also be able to see that out of the grant of 15 billion next year, we are not spending all of it in. It's not spent in creating a unit. Some of it is spent in programs that facilitate the process. So you will be able to see, for example, the financing of the assistance we provide to municipalities that do not have grants to ensure that they've got a proper housing plan is also funded there. The output out of that is not the houses. It relates to the plans that have been produced. So we'll be able to show what gets delivered with regard to that. A beneficiary list. The beneficiary list, I think Mr. Kabagambe can support me if I cannot cover everything. Chair, it is our intention to have this fast-tracked and produced. at this stage, Chair, it will provide what is the pool of demand with regard to housing needs in each of the in a municipality in a province. As to whether we will be able to, because the delivery itself is not necessarily dealing with the full demand, it is an instrument we use at the time of planning to manage the issue of beneficiary housing allocation. It is only linked to a beneficiary at the time when there is a project planned, and therefore the criteria for deciding who gets priority in a particular community. So I don't think that we will be in a position to provide the full list of the people who are in demand linked to a house that is about to be provided, because that is not in existence at the moment. What the beneficiary is seeking to do is to identify who is in the category of demand for housing, who qualifies out of the people who have not accessed housing in each of those areas, so that when there is a development, they use that as a basis for allocating the people. The houses. If there is anything I need, I will ask my colleagues to augment. Anything more, colleagues? Researcher? Oh, okay. There is that question on office accommodation. I'll deal with it. The provision that we have under Program 1 for office accommodation relates to our own office accommodation as a national department. Unfortunately, at the national level, the properties we are utilizing were leased or organized through public works. Very often, in some of the areas, they do not have sufficient buildings themselves to accommodate departments. I think there are a few cases where they are now building additional stock, etc. In such situations, it becomes easier because they become your landlord, and effectively, the rental is not paid because they simply maintain the building from time to time. But at the moment, for most departments in Pretoria largely, they are hiring them from private sector people. I am aware that they are trying to buy some of those buildings where they have been used for a considerable amount of time, and the departments do not seem to indicate that they are ever going to move away from those. I mean, we're naming some of the buildings so that they are recognized for this. Ours is Coven Baking, for example, building, and we've been using it for more than 10 years. And I think they are, from what I was told, negotiating how they can acquire that building. And then once they acquire it, then it becomes government. You may find that cost, there will be nobody to be paid for. There will be one capital expenditure incurred by public works. And then we simply have to maintain the building as occupants. But at the moment, because there is rental, they decentralized the process of payment for rental, although they themselves used to cover this cost in the past. If you remember, there wasn't such a cost in the past. They used to cover it. What they did, they transferred the money for those to the program, and then for any new requirements, then you motivate on your own based on a strategic plan for the increase. So this is rental to private sector people in the national department. Yes, I think on the consultants, I agree with the comment. We are seeking, as part of the cost-cutting measures, we looked at travel, as I indicated, I think last year in November, when I came to the committee. We did look at the extent with which we can reduce traveling that can be reduced. That does not have a detrimental effect to service delivery. Given our model that we have always been a department that is located in Victoria, largely, and we service a and interact with provinces for various reasons. You're monitoring people have to move and be there sometimes. The alternative being to set up parallel structures at a provincial level, which themselves are going to create a different type of a cost. So we are looking at all of those things. But we have been very rigorous with regard to how we cut back on some of those things, and we have achieved real savings with regard to that. We are also rigorously looking at mechanisms. I mean, if you want a consultant, you've got to prove that there are a lot of things, why it can't be done internally, etc., etc. And there are things eventually that will not lend themselves to any better arrangement than to be outsourced. Things that are specialized. We're trying to get to that point where only specialized things are outsourced and not just everything that is core business of the department. And in that regard, I know that I have many
communal lands
with regard to that.
I did address that, didn't I? I did.
I did check, yes. Thank you, sir. Kabat, did you want to say anything?
Well, Chairperson, in respect to the issue of beneficiary management, I think the honorable members would remember that some months ago we came here to discuss with you the demand database project. I think it was the end of last year. And what that seeks to do is to improve a number of things. One, the manner in which we capture data that relates to beneficiaries from municipalities to provinces, and to have it centralized nationally so that we as a national department are able to interact with that list, and you yourselves as an oversight structure. But there was also the issue of integrity of that list, because as you know, in some cases, as you saw in the Eastern Cape, you find many lists. So that is currently underway. And the commitment was that in the coming year, the coming financial year, that system would kick in. We got very valuable input from yourselves, and that process is underway. But we also wish to inform the House that we've also started a system of dealing with sector information management. Because we realized, as you have indicated in the past, that we need to capture data beyond just the waiting list. So, for example, the issue of how you link expenditure to physical development. It is an issue that has been raised here today. The issue of how you link land availability to the development plan of a province. We are at a very advanced stage, and I'm sure that through the acting DG, we should be coming back to you to present to you this sector information management system, which we believe will enhance the kind of issues that are being referred to here.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Chair. Honourable members. I'm just going to address briefly the issue of sanitation. You are inheriting a huge challenge in South Africa. It's not going to be easy. We're going to need your political support in the program. The program started in 96, and the backlog there, we're dealing only with backlog of houses without sanitation. That should be clear. And our backlog was 5.4 million households. And now, those households, and the backlog of those houses is standing at 2.8. The challenge is now, we are hearing of 1.2 informal settlements. Those people don't have sanitation. If we add on 2.8, it gives us almost 4.4 million. And again, if you can still remember, when we started the RTP houses, most provinces opted not to provide sanitation in those RTP houses. We dealt with this poverty removal eradication pre-1994. We almost, out of 254, household, we were using packet pre-1994. We were only left with 6,000 in three states because of conditions below. Now the comeback of the RDP houses, which we didn't have proper sanitation, and they were given budget. We are adding now again on the backlog a 200,000 household, which where proper sanitation facilities has to be provided. It gives the backlog now, as we say in South Africa, of household with inadequate sanitation to 402 million households. It's a huge challenge. There's a lot of money needed. The minimum unit cost of providing just a dry sanitation VIP on site is 7,500 rand. But if you have to provide waterborne, the minimum unit cost, that is one toilet, it can cost about 10,000 rand, one toilet. So you can just calculate how much is billions of rand needed to eradicate a sanitation backlog. And mainly this backlog is sitting in the rural areas. That's why now there's this grant called the Rural Household Infrastructure Grant, which we have fought for it for National Trust to provide that funding, which is 1.2 billion over 3 years. The one the acting DG was saying is about 200 million first year, which is starting in April. The next year is 350 million, and the third year is 750 million. It's supposed to address at least the backlog in the rural area, mainly sanitation, but we are expected to deal with a little bit of water here and there, where we get to respect to communities and we find out they don't have sanitation and water. We can provide JoJo tanks and we can provide groundwater, as long as it's not dependent on bulk, because in anything depending on bulk, we cannot even set a time frame because there's a lot of money needed for bulk infrastructure. When it comes to that question of 350 million, following year it became zero. In 2007, we were given 665 million to deal with backlog of water and sanitation in schools and clinics. The first year was 105. We dealt with schools and clinics. We finished them. And only the school which has no water, only the clinics and schools which have no water, no sanitation, there are a number of schools which have inadequate sanitation and inadequate water. We didn't address them. That's why now again, when you say we have completed this clinic, somebody would cry and say, no, you are lying. There's a clinic somewhere which has no water, whatever. It's because we were not addressing those who have a little drop of water. We were dealing with those who had nothing that time. And 2007, we did clinics, and with 2008, we started with schools, and we started, we were in the process of finishing the school. When I say we're in the process of finishing of schools, really, we are not finishing the schools. There are schools will still be remaining at the end of March this year. We are only finishing those schools which we are given budget to deal with. For instance, for sanitation, we are still going to be having 706 schools without sanitation in South Africa. Or for water, 1,727 schools without sanitation. And this is a kind of backlog which will be probably be answerable with, maybe find ways of funding a budget. The budget which we are given is getting finished end of March. I've been talking with National Trust to try and get budget to move beyond March 2010. There are some promises, that's why we are not putting figures there. Maybe by next week, you know, I'm going to meet you at National Trust, we might find some money to indicate how much we can have over the MTF for water and sanitation in schools. But beyond that, the provinces, the provincial departments of education, they are the ones who are supposed to provide water and sanitation in schools. It's not national departments, but we are intervening now because there's a problem. Second, if you don't get money from national treasurers, I need to consult with the provincial departments to ensure that I support them to deliver water and school and sanitation in those remaining schools, because we can't say the program is complete if there are still children without sanitation and water. The issue of baguette, as I've said, we have dealt with the baguettes which were given pre 1994. The post 1994, what we have done in the framework for allocation of budget for MIC funding for 2010 MTF, one condition is that municipalities, the best thing about this backlog of baguette existing one, is in all provinces of South Africa. The previous one, it was in selected provinces, but this one, all provinces, they have buckets now. So when we put up the framework for the allocation of the municipal infrastructure grant, we have indicated that those municipalities or provinces which have buckets, they must prioritize the removal of packet. We didn't put up a specific amount of figure. We'll be going around the municipality, the province, and that's to determine how many the province and how much the province must set aside or the municipality to eradicate. Because when we support the municipality this coming year, we are going to make sure they first remove the packets, because we are a country like South Africa cannot be using a packet now, really. We need to do something. So they'll probably, little going to be done. Maybe we'll be getting almost 2.something billion from MIG to deal with sanitation. But that money, I can tell now, it will mainly be used, be utilized for removing the existing packet in those RTP houses and put a waterborne system. So I don't know, it's clear, but I think I'll need a couple of hours to sit with you, to take you through the program so that you can understand where are you going to assist us in the delivery of water. It's not even sanitation, it's not that only sanitation national program has been brought to Department of Human Settlement, but if you can hear me, I'm talking of water in schools. I'm talking of water in rural areas. This is what Human Settlement is going to be responsible. It's not only sanitation. It's only sanitation legally because it was transferred, but the function we are going to be doing, it will be both water and sanitation in rural areas, especially in those areas which were there. They've never seen water, potable water. They've seen water running in the rivers, but they've never seen potable water and they've never seen a toilet. This is a challenge we are having now. That's why that 1.2 billion is just a start. We need more than that to eradicate the backlog of sanitation, which is 72% of backlog in South Africa in sanitation in rural areas. There's a lot of work which needs to be done. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I think Mr. Dalon touched the issue of coming back with the national delivery plan. I think we will need that session before the budget debate, because as a committee we cannot go and debate and tell the nation something that we are even not sure about. Because when we speak to the nation, we must be able to articulate what are the plans for housing delivery we are planning to deliver this current financial year. What are the targets? What are the indicators? What are we going to do to ensure that we monitor the service delivery? What are we going to do? And then I think those issues are very much important for the portfolio committee. We appreciate the presentation. We don't dispute what has been presented before us. But we need more information. For instance, there is no mention of the budget speech by the minister, because there were issues that were articulated from the budget speech. One of them is there's going to be a support grant that has been allocated already to the department to manage the supply chain management system. So I think it is very much important, those issues, because when you listen to the treasurer elaborating on that, it has got also an implication to our department that we are monitoring, we are oversighting. Then the second point is about job creation. I think all the departments, all the stress plans of the departments have to express their plans that are elaborated on the five key priority areas. Now we are having the top seven. Now, have to be linked to those two. We admire that there's that coordination that is there of those core institutions that have to be working together with the department. But I think it is important to get a clear and precise plan that is talking to that. And there's also this housing employment subsidy. How is the department going to work around that? Because we do have those expanded public works programs where there's that youth development training. We have been to a show with other members. We have seen that program. How is this going to be linked? And what are the options that are there to implement this subsidy? What is the study that has been done by the department? There might be two options or three. And if you select one option, why are you selecting one? Just to cite an example, how is that grant going to be accessible? Will it be given to the employee, or will it be directed to the employer? Whatever case that is going to be followed, why are we choosing that route? So I think there's quite a lot of expressions that are there from the budget speech or of the National Treasury. So we would like that the department should come up with those issues clearly defined, so that when we speak to the nation, our minds must be clear. So I can give to the members the next round. I have noted Honorable Botha, Honorable Richard, Honorable Mama, then Honorable Nisi, Honorable Dane, Honorable Dabu, the after Bowman, and then Tatema Choba will be the last. So let's try and wrap up so that we can, yeah, the time is now, just moving. In that session, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is two or three questions. One, I just want clarity. I'm a little bit confused. When we use, whether the word households and units is used interchangeably, does it mean the same thing? Because I see when you talk about the informal settlement, you talk about addressing so many households. When you talk about the 6,000 hectares of land where you're going to build, you talk about units. I just want clarity on that. This, related to that is then my question. When you say there's 6,250 hectares of land, of well-located land upon which you want to build 400,000 units, does that land include the land of the well-located informal settlement? In other words, are the informal settlements also included in the 6,250 hectares of land? Or is that in addition to? Then you talk about accelerating the provision of bulk infrastructure to prioritize settlements. Now, and you are going to assist in this. My question is, what must we measure you against? In other words, what are your milestones in ensuring that you are working towards addressing this specific issue of the bulk infrastructure? Because it is an issue, a very serious one, when it comes to human settlement. And where is the money going to come from? Is it coming from the MIG allocation? Are you intending to approach the private sector, or have you budgeted for this in your medium-term expenditure framework? Now, on the issue of the people who are earning too high an income to get subsidies, or low or too little to qualify for bond mortgage or bank mortgages. Again, you're saying you're going to assist, you're going to facilitate this. Now, what specifically is the department intending to do to assist this category of people? I mean, I assume these are nurses, your police, your soldiers. Your, now, it's one thing to say we're going to assist, or we're going to facilitate financing, access to finance. But what does that really mean in practice? Because 5 years down the line, we're going to say we're facilitating. What is it that we're going to measure you against to say you really have moved from point A to point B? You are now maybe between point B and point C. So really, that's really what that's all I need to clarify. Yes.
Thank you.
For the point, one point I think has been touched by Comrade Toll or Honourable Porter, and it's really a question that I do think that is abandoned. The committee and yourself at a certain point in time, you must meet and agree on how you're going to measure and then the performance generated, the oversight function, and then what would be the indicators and metrics that we'll use to be sure really that every problem that we have put here, we'll be able to say, but if this one, Savant, we have not achieved this matter, there are no even indication. I think that's what we should do. Because then our oversight function will be much more vigorous and also focused. It doesn't just the oversight function, it's what is gone and so on, because I don't think we'll assist that. And then I think if we agree on that, it would be far easier. I think Parliament as a whole anyway, I think they must try to do so. Because otherwise, it becomes just a routine, ritual way of doing things, which I think is a very problematic way. But the point that you have, and then to the point that I wanted to raise, is a question of dual residence. Because I think on your area, you are saying, I think it's page 4, we are arguing the point that I think is the reality, that is the dual residence is deeply entrenched. But at the same time, you are saying migration to urban areas is increasingly permanent. And therefore, it may sound a little bit in contradiction, but I guess that is not. I think it's a dialectic process, maybe, that you are working on. But I want to raise a point that, because I think the lady there was raising an issue. I thought the president was saying, I think it was this year or last year. Of course, I'm not quoting him in verbatim, but I think the point that he was raising, that even people in rural areas will have a water upon a toilet. That would have flushing toilet, you know. I was thinking that in Zulu. And then I just guess that is the point, because I think the man I was putting it is that seems it's going to take us many years, which I think, anyway, truly speaking, it's going to take us many years. Because I think in Gomez, if you go to Umsi and have the system that we are proposing, I think it will take us really many years. Because we are talking about one crawl here, another crawl is almost 5 kilometers away. Sure, really, to link these matters would need billions of friends. I think I agree with the point that you are raising. But I hope that there are areas that are targeted areas, like schools and clinics. Because there are targeted areas that I think we must be working. I think our oversight functional should be focusing on those areas. So there are targeted areas that we must provide. Sanitation in this area is a must, because these are public, the public amenities area. And then to me, I think that's what we should really try to do. And I accept the assumption that we are putting in terms of the formulation of your budget. I guess that we know where that we'll have enough resources, because resources are very scarce. But I hope that the department as a whole, Davanti, is a well-oiled machinery to deliver what you are telling us today that we are going to do. And then that there will be no excuses, because I guess that you know how much is there, and then also your structures, I think they've been acceptable. Therefore, I do think that really that's going to be very exciting. I mean, how we are going to be engaging with the department in terms of the deliverables. That we should be agreeing what are the deliverables ourselves we are going to agree on with the department. The minister in particular, because the minister general that account to us, then the staff general comes to us to answer, because they are answerable to us, but the minister is accountable to us. Therefore, it's a system that we must really master ourselves in order for us to address some of the issues that I think are very problematic. And then underspending, sometimes overspending, sometimes some of the issues there. I know that in other areas sometimes, I don't see it here, but there are sometimes very skillful administrators, they create their own slash fund within the overall budget. Like arguing that, you know, they are going to employ 25 people, they employ only 5. Therefore, they will have more resources to do whatever they want to do. So the budget is completely distorted. And therefore, as a result of that, makes it very difficult to do a very effective oversight function, because everything is understated. And then because it's understated, really, then when we achieve 50% of what we have understated anyway from the beginning, we think that we have performed extremely well. And then I think that's what I think we should work on it. And I think this committee really should work on it, because as an anchor department, if we do real oversight function that is vigorous on you, I guess that we'll be able then to have an impact to other departments that are anchoring in the overall department. I think to me that's what really we should do. And I said the budget, I think the budget is there. I don't think we can do many things on it. But the point of policy matters, because I think there are no policy gaps now. I think because the argument always that policies are in place, it's just the machinery that is not working. And I'm not sure that you understand. I see some of the allocation in some provinces, little bit provinces are performing to a highest level. The only problem is the quality of what they are delivering. Because I do think that that's the issue that the department national must really work on. Because it's well and good to say you are going to provide 50,000 RDP houses, but really everything is substandard. You have delivered, but it's a substandard thing, really. No one is very appreciative of one of the issues there. And I just was guessing that Davanti, somewhere, the whole issue of climate issues that you are raising here, also there will be some progress that ourselves will be able to measure you whether we are trying to address the climate challenges as you build new settlements. There was a lot of new settlements, I guess, that you have to build. Maybe you may also have to build a new Johannesburg somewhere. I'm not sure. But I guess that we need to, because it is a large number of people who are in informal settlements. Some of them are really in a very desperate condition in terms of water in particular, and the sanitation broadly speaking. I think to me it's a real problem that I think the department must facilitate with their colleagues in other departments who are anchoring on your department to deliver some of this. At school, I don't think it should be any discussion about schooling, really. I don't think it's right to have school even today working during break. All of them, they must go through the forest. And then in 21st century, I think it would be wrong. Not because there's resources, it's just the machinery is not doing what it's supposed to do. And then a lot of more excuses in doing what we are doing. I think to me, those are issues that really, I think I agree, share that we must have this interaction with the department, a very open interaction with the department, particularly with the minister also, to agree on how you're going to measure the political level, the implication of, or the impact of what you are trying to do. Because I do think that if the human settlement department as a whole does it well, the impact in our society is going to be very high. In fact, some of us were just listening to the people in Dabazo next to you in Mamelodi yesterday.
were protesting in Mazumbe in general, many of the issues around the housing issue, water and housing, more than any other thing, they people are raising kale. Simply means that really this department, if they can assist us working together with us. Of course, we are policymakers, really. We won't deliver any house ourselves. But we want you to deliver quality houses to our people. Therefore, how we measure that ourselves, I think, will be very critical. Because at the end of the financial year, we must be able to say, this 12.2 billion, right? And then it has really made an impact. And has created jobs to our people, has trained many people, has dealt with cooperatives. That's what I think we should be doing. And then, despite the rent and set that I mentioned here. To me, I think that's the point that I wanted just to ask you. What another thing that I think the Human Settlement Department General, I'm not sure, Zabanduti, when are we going to get, it's a complex thing because it seems South African, we really think of brick and mortar only. I think, of course, maybe it's cultural, I don't know what makes South African to be so married to brick and mortar. Any other creative way of providing accommodation or shelter is almost not acceptable project. I want to ask that this department really should really try to change that mindset. It's going to take time, but I do think that we must start doing that. Because this brick and mortar thing forever, I don't think it's sustainable because of cement tools. We must be very happy about that anyway. And there's a small food for us. But the point that I'm raising, generally, is that this department should do that. I guess that 10 years down the line, I think we should have changed the mindset of our people to accept other forms of shelter that we can provide to them. Because I don't think brick and mortar every time is a solution in some of the areas that are very difficult. And then building a house somewhere in Mzinga, and then go the climb in the mountains with your brick and mortar, I think it would take many years to do so. I think we need to be very creative. That's why I think this department must be very instrumental in leading innovation and creativity and experimentation on some of the issues. And then on rural areas, I guess that we must really deal with some of the desperate situation in rural areas. Particular farm dwellers, I think we should target them. They've been victims for many years. And then to me, I think those are not thousands of them, really. And then I think we should focus on them. I think the department must work together with farmers to ensure that we deal with this question of farm dwellers. I don't think it's very expensive, truly speaking, to start attending to their desperate situation. And then to me, that would be really the argument. I think for the point that we are raising, consolidation of the cities, I think it's very critical for us that the cities must be consolidated. That I'm not sure what is the impact of the migration, not the intra-migration, because you know that we always follow opportunities. But migration is bigger than just South African migrating from Swane to Johannesburg to Accra. There are also migrations from the continent. And sometimes when we talk about this formal settlement, I got no understanding exactly. How many people who qualify? Simply means who are South Africans that qualify to be given assistance like us. And then, because there are other people who are general who are not non-South African citizens. And how do you deal with that situation? It's a broader policy matter that I think that we must look at seriously. Because otherwise, getting rid of informal settlement by 2014, but now I think their view is very clear, which I agree with, that it's realistic, that it's 500,000 by 2014 is much more than 50. And then to me, that's what we should be doing, really, because I don't think it's easy to get rid of all these informal segments, because also there's also just natural expansion. Like I think that when you went to Alexandria, you know that when we grew up in Alexandria, in 1 year, there were 15 families. One person, one room, the family of five. Surely, the internal growth in Alexandria itself, not just migrating people, is huge. Sometimes we talk as if there's no internal growth in Soweto.
the backyard dwellers in Soweto generally are born and bred in Soweto. They're not people who are just migrating in Soweto, because there's an internal growth of this family. Therefore, if we don't cover that, I think that is also causing a lot of delays and problems for the entire society. I think, to me, those are issues that I want to raise broadly, really, for discussion in future. I think the meeting that Chair is proposing, I think, will be a very good meeting for us again to refine. And also to agree, because we've got no intention to embarrass anyone. Our intention is to see the department functioning the way we think it should function. Therefore, I think engagement with the department at their accountability level and also their answerability level in terms of official, because we need information from you for us to be very able to raise some of the difficult questions. That's a comment that I wanted to make. And then I support really the budget. I think it's fine. It's a lot of money. 12 billion rand is a lot of money. And I think we can do a lot of work.
It's 16 now.
It's 16 now? Oh, I'm under my house. 4 million rand is for Dabani to think through. but I think it's a lot of money.
I want to confirm last week.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
No, I think it's a lot of money. I think we must make an impact. This department, really, we must know how many jobs have been created by the department. Of course, there will be no direct jobs sometimes, because building of houses sometimes is temporary, but generally, just give us a clue, 500,000 jobs, 250,000 jobs, because as you plan, you must be assisting us to address the core problem that we are facing, unemployment. And then this department, I think, can assist us to do so.
And you speak once a year. Honorable, my list was Honorable Mama first, and then yourself, Committee.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I think really most of the points I want to raise have already been touched on. So if I touch on them again, it's really to emphasize to the department the importance, you know, of some of these areas that we are talking about. Hoping that, you see, as we move along, they will definitely be answered. I want to start with the question of migration also. But here, what I want to say myself is, yes, it is true. I've come to accept myself that, yeah, migration into the cities in South Africa is a reality. Not only in South Africa, of course, we know it is a trend elsewhere in the world, but it's happening here too. It is a reality. And the question of dual residence is true. It is there. And I think the tendency is for people now to prefer to reside more in the cities than in the rural areas. They come back just for holidays, for December, Christmas, for weddings, for funerals, and they go back to the cities. So I think it is the reality, and we can't run away from it. But then the question is, are we just going to leave it to take place on its own, at its own pace, in its own way? Or are we going to try and find ways of, we may not curb it 100%, but can't we find ways of reducing it? Because, you see, in South Africa, we have very, very few cities after all. There are very few of them. And so the migration is either to Joburg, to Durban, to Bloemfontein, to Cape Town. And it ends there. Port Elizabeth, that's about all. The other towns are very small anyway, and they can't take many, many more people. And when we try to increase the settlements in these areas, few cities, are we not crowding the administration? Are we not making it too bulky to manage? Isn't there a way of doing something to reduce the migration into the cities? I want to go back to the concept of rural industry. Isn't the Human Settlement Department in coordination with the Department of Rural Development? What is the Rural Development Department going to contribute towards, for instance, assisting the Human Settlement Department to reduce, as I say, this migration, and therefore solve, in one way or another, the question of
settling the people, not only in the cities, but all over the country. I'm trying to propose here that let's look at the concept of rural industry and see if that cannot, over time, assist us in reducing the migration into the cities. Now, secondly, or on page 5, you talk about the increase in rental housing, creating 20 units per year. Yes, that's a good idea. But in my opinion, people will only be able to rent housing if they have jobs, because that's got to be regular. And therefore, it seems also this should be developed, not just on its own, but along with the creation of jobs. So, for instance, there should be a relationship between the amount of housing that we want to introduce per year and the number of jobs that are created in the country per year, so that those people who have jobs will be able to rent those houses. Otherwise, we'll have houses built and no one to rent them if people don't have jobs. Now, the other question has come up, I think, about three times, and I'm the fourth one. It's just for emphasis, okay. That question of facilitating increased supply of affordable housing finance. I had, my format was exactly the same as the colleague sitting next to me, because I also asked the question, how are you going to do it practically? I know the acting DG did respond to a similar question that was asked earlier on, but one is still not quite very clear as to exactly how it is going to happen. And you are talking about an announcement which is going to be made by the minister very soon in this area. Now, my question then would also be, how long do we wait for the announcement? We are very curious to know what is in the announcement. Now, I noticed that, of course, there is an increase in the budget, the total budget, but also that there is an increase in the budget of the various items. That keeps on coming up all the time, that there is an increase, there is an increase. But one would want to know, particularly with regard to the provision of housing, whether the increase in this area is dictated by the need or the demand on housing, or is it just an increase just because we happen to have a bigger revenue this year and therefore you are lucky to get an increase? Is it related to the demand? In other words, if it is related to the demand, we can then say this year, next year, in so many years, we should be in a position where, for instance, we have succeeded to a certain extent in providing housing for our people. But if it is just because the revenue has increased this year, more people have paid their taxes, then I'm afraid it's not going to help. I'm just trying to find out whether there is any relationship between the increase and the demand for housing, for example. Now, on the question of capacity development, I think it appears on page 15 that we build capacity in administration and delivery in municipalities. I would just want to know, what form does this capacity development take? And how, for instance, are we going to be able to see, you know, that the municipalities in particular have been capacitated? Because at present, we are faced with a very low quality of housing in the rural areas out there. I'm speaking mostly for the rural areas because that's where I come from, and those are the ones that I see all the time. What hope do we have that the municipalities actually have become capacitated or are becoming capacitated in ensuring that not only the administration but also the quality of houses that we get in those areas is better? The question of understanding by some provinces, the colleague has mentioned something about that. I noticed in the table here on the last page, it's mostly the Western Cape and Mpumalanga. They if they receive all their funds, Western Cape, for instance, will have, by, we can say the Western Cape has unspent by 29% and Mpumalanga 23%. To me, that's very high because this is March. We are left with just a few weeks before the year ends. If they still have some 29%, some 23% that they have not spent at this time, when are they going to spend it? And even the others, actually, the Eastern Cape KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape is 15%, KwaZulu-Natal is 19%, and there's another one also with some 16 or 18%. I mean, as I say, the year will soon be ending, and this money has not been spent. What does the National Department of Human Settlement do with such provinces that underspend, in spite of the fact that there is such a high demand for housing? Not only for new housing. You know, for instance, personally, what I would like to see, if I had a say in the Eastern Cape, what I would like to see, for instance, I would like to see money being spent on improving the existing housing, the existing RDP houses. As I've said before, they are actually an embarrassment to those of us who are connected with government. You see, people out there, when I talk to them, they see me as someone who comes from the government. They hardly make the difference between parliament and the government. You see, they see you as someone who comes from government, and therefore they see you as someone who is providing them with those houses. And you feel quite embarrassed. Because, I mean, we all know the quality is very, very poor in some areas. But also there's something else that probably we need to look into. Once we have created these RDP villages, what else do we do to ensure that the people really own them? You see, it's different, for instance, from a house that you have built yourself. People look after that house, the yard, and so on and so forth. But I think the tendency now, it seems, of course I'm not blaming the department, but I'm blaming our people as well. But I think we need to look into this. You find that you give them those houses, and they never do, many people never do anything to improve anything in those houses. What are we going to do about that? And therefore, when you look at the village as a whole, it looks very miserable. And then you say, this is what the government is giving the people. That's what happens. That's what you say. When you look at the village as a whole, this is what the government is giving the people. So I think we should go beyond just giving them those houses. We've got to find a way of making them accept that it is their property, and therefore they have also to look after it. They hardly renovate them. And yet out there in the villages, poor as we might be, every December, we renovate our houses. It's a tradition. Christmas time, your houses must look nice and beautiful. But in the RDP villages, nothing happens. What are we going to do about that? Next, as a chairperson, I won't be long. I've spoken about the quality of the houses. The sanitation services, I think I also agree with my colleagues on that. But my worry is, you know, the villages that were there when I grew up, one house was here, the other home was over there, another was over there. So there was lots of space in between. We didn't have toilets, but at least there was lots of space around that could be used, and people knew what spaces to use for that purpose. Those of you who grew at my time know that. But now you see, the villages are different from that. The houses are close to one another. The homes are now close to one another. Not very different, for instance, from a town situation. You've got one house here, another one there. And therefore, sanitation becomes important. But there's no water. You can't talk about water toilets in Ngolo Ngolo. There is just no water even for household purposes.
You can't talk about water in most of those places. I mean, water toilets in most of those places, because there's just no water, even for the kitchen, much more for the toilet. So what are we doing about that? What are we doing about that? It's one of the reasons, for instance, why when we have very heavy rain, you find that our rivers get infected. You see, all these things come together as one in the end, and therefore we all have to look at all these things together. I think that must also be looked at. In other words, what I'm trying to appeal here for is that let's not only look at the RDP houses when we talk about sanitation. Let's also look at the existing villages and see what needs to be done. In my opinion, what we need to do actually is to capacitate the people to be able themselves to build good standard toilets. If, for instance, we had a standard toilet and say no home must build a toilet unless the basic standard is built, and therefore we'll be able, for instance, to solve some of the problems. I think those structures are very poor, are very, very poor, but the people build them themselves and we can't blame them. They don't, for instance, know how deep it should be, you know, the pit latrines and so on. But, I mean, it's just very, very sad. But we need to look into it. I'm trying to appeal for those people in the rural villages that are existing, not only the RDP villages, but they are also part of the South Africa, and in my opinion, the Department of Human Settlements should also look at their standards of living. And lastly, Chairperson, I want to support what my colleague said about the question of brick and mortar housing. I also want to agree that we need to look at other ways of building houses. People have been building houses in South Africa for a very long time. Long before we knew about the brick, there were houses, strong hearts, very, very strong hearts, and which lasted for years and years and years. And therefore, we need to look into that. But there is also CSIR, which is doing a lot of research in technology and so on. Why can't CSIR, for instance, go around studying the various kinds of soil in our different parts of the country and developing some kind of material, mixed building material, from which, for instance, we can either build bricks or whatever, but to build our houses without making it too expensive, but using as much as is possible local material. And the NPs, for example, they're very good, they're very strong. There's lots of them in some parts of the Eastern Cape. You just find a whole hillside covered with NPs, and yet the houses that are built there are very poor. Why don't we do something, do some research, the CSIR, as I say, let them do research and see how, for instance, we can make bricks that are not so expensive as ordinary cement bricks, but at the same time can just be as strong and typical South African. Thank you very much.
Because she's coming up with good, at least advices, we have to appreciate that. I think I was going to, my list is come Nokaya, Lavute, Spain, Bomen, and then we'll do the last one. Let's come into that session.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think my colleague has said a mouthful and has covered me in some of the issues. The only worry I have is that it's about quality. What we experience on the ground is really shocking. We can see that some of our provinces have improved, and there are still those who are still understanding, but most of our provinces, we can see that there is difference. They are going forward, but the problem is the quality. I just want to know if there are any measures in place to try to tighten up the monitoring. The quality is really troubling me. The other thing some colleagues have been asking about this question. I will also stress on that. That is on page 6. The issue about accommodating people whose salaries are too high and too... What I would like to know is, what is it exactly that you intend to do on this? Because I'm not clear on that one. What is it exactly that you intend to do? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to ask the department if they have their data of beneficiaries, because you may find that some of the people who migrate to the cities or to the informal settlements have already benefited in the rural areas, or some of them will benefit in the informal settlement, will have RDP houses there, then they move back, they'll be there maybe for 5 years. Then after these 5 years, they'll move back to their rural area where they want to benefit another RDP house. Is it possible for people to benefit twice from the very same department or what? Because these are some of the problems we are encountering as politicians in our own places. So you may find that even those people in Mamelodi who were toitoing yesterday demanding this housing, I'm not saying all of them, but some of them you may find that they've already benefited somewhere. Then they move to the to those informal settlements. On the issue of sanitation, in the rural areas where I come from, they use the government built pit latrines. I'm worried with those kind of toilets because there is no inspection from the health inspectors, because in my understanding, the health department must work together hand in hand with the human settlement department in terms of sanitation to check, because in the rural areas we don't have enough water to have this proper toilets, flushing toilets, I may say that. So the health hazard on this matter is that you'll find that as we don't have water, enough water, and this pit latrine, they dig the hole, they don't put the slab into that hole to control that, you know what I mean. So that even if the department, our government tried to address the question of water by putting boreholes, there will be no health hazard. But because those pit toilets are not inspected by health inspectors, they do it the other way around. That's why at the end we experience the outbreaks of cholera and all those things. There are many schools in our rural areas. I'm not talking about Mpumalanga only, but Eastern Cape, KZN, and all those provinces with rural areas where the schools doesn't have proper sanitation. It's a real problem in those areas because you'll find that some of the kids, they are very small. They don't know that after being in the toilet, you must wash your hands. So these things are health hazards. If our department can prioritize the issue of sanitation, that will make us happy. Because we are saying sanitation, Mr. Labantu last week indicated that the department has enough money. So I'm a little concerned when Usis Lapa Ati, they don't have enough money for sanitation. In my case, I think sanitation must be a priority. And it's very embarrassing to hear that there are places where they still use buckets after 15 years of democracy. No, this cannot be. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I hope I'm going to get injury time now. Chair, I think it's become very clear from the contribution by members that we do need probably a full day with the department purely on policy and strategy. And if I may, I just want to bring us back to the budget. For my honourable colleague next door, I think the Western Cape is not going to underspend, and in fact, most of the other provinces.
Don't defend. Just carry on with the question. Don't worry about the contribution by the members, but look at the.
I believe none of the provinces are in fact going to underspend. If anything, they're going to within a very small percentage reach their expenditure. But the problem for me there is, Chairperson, that you know it's not for us about whether they're spending their money. It's what are we getting for that money? So to link on with some of the other questions, we should see the expenditure together with the outcomes. Because then we know they've actually spent their budget, but they've also reached their targets, because they may very well spend the budget and have reached half the target, in which case we need to ask some questions. So that was that question, and related to that and delivery indicators, which a lot of members raised. On page 8, for example, we've got the service delivery indicators. Now, I cannot understand in this current year, when we've had a 3 billion rand increase over the previous year, that our deliveries are actually less than what it was the previous year, particularly to the number of houses. I mean, we've dropped from 240 almost to 166 with a 3 billion rand increase. How do we explain that? Where is that money gone? Then I think even more worrying is the fact that we expect a 2 billion rand increase for the next financial year, and we've got a very small increase in our deliverables. And if we look at the MTEF period, it more or less stays the same for the next year, 2011, 2012, and yet we got another 2.5 billion rand increase. So again, it leads on to a question my colleague asked about, you know, is it just a question of there being more money? Shouldn't we get the outcomes increased? I do realize there's inflation, but I would expect some of our delivery indicators to increase simultaneously. Chair, very importantly, municipalities, in the strategic overview of our budget, our vote for this new budget, it says the department will emphasize providing guidance and support on policy implementation, and this will include direct support to provinces and municipalities. Now, that brings me to the indicators there of 18 municipalities per year, and it's been from 2008-09 right up to 2011-12. I'd like to actually think that once we've had 18 municipalities in 2008-09, and we've got 18 again in 2009-10, that it's 18 new municipalities and not a carry over the same 18 that we will continuously be supporting. So I'd like some clarification there. Then, Chairperson, the link to that, in Program 3 on pages 9 and 8, there's actually a cut in the budget there, and yet we're saying that we're going to increase the support to municipalities. So it's just something that I'm raising as a flag. We're putting emphasis on we're going to support municipalities and provinces more, but we seem to be cutting the budget. In fact, there's a budget that's been cut in half that relates to that as well. I'm going to jump some things here. Stakeholder mobilization. That's on page 50, and capacity development. We've raised it relatively often in this committee, but once again, there's a lack of measurable outcomes. I think in this case, the budget probably increases, but we don't really know what's being done, how that money is spent, what are we actually achieving with that money. And I think that needs to, at some point, we need some sort of report on that. I obviously welcome the decrease in the expenditure on consultancies, but again, a flag that I want to raise, Chairperson, we've raised it again, there's a problem with monitoring and evaluation and project managers. Are we to assume that the department has now got that capacity? Because I presume that they've used a consultant primarily for that. If they've now cut their budget, which is welcome, are we to assume that they've got the capacity to do the increased monitoring on projects so we don't get the sort of quality that we've been getting in the past? Something that's pretty important for me and I think for the committee, there was strategic management on page 22. I'd like to know, in view of what has been said by the President, in view of the two new ministries and so on,
will this particular program include performance contracts and the monitoring and assessment of those performance contracts for senior staff? And if not, then where's, in which line item is that going to come? Just one last one, Chair. I was a bit concerned. I don't see anything in the budget regarding any donor funds that we may be receiving. And I seem to recall on one of the oversight visits, there was very specifically some donor funding for the solar panels. Should that not be reflected in the budget somewhere? And isn't it an ongoing thing that we see over the MTEF period? Lastly, Chairperson, if I may, which has got to do with this, we've asked for it in the past, for us to do our oversight work properly. There are quarterly reports, both from a financial point of view and I presume stats in terms of houses built that are given to the department. We've asked for those to come to the committee as well. This past financial year, we haven't seen any. We cannot perform our oversight function if we don't keep track. We can't do it at the end of the financial year. It's got to be an ongoing process, and I want to appeal once again that we regularly get, at least on a quarterly basis, that we get the expenditure profiles, that we get the outcomes, the service indicators, along with those expenditure figures. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Another comment?
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't want to add to the long discussion we've had about sanitation, but I think it is important, since it is a new section into our department here, that I would agree that I think we do need to have time when we can actually get a proper report, and I think it's something that we do need to have a red flag, because some of the things that we've picked up on the ground with our oversight, we need to be sure that we are overseeing that much better than we are. And it sort of leads me here, according to the budget, Mr. Plawantu spoke about the 350 million rand from the sanitation grant, and then that drops right down to 100 million, which he seems to indicate now falls under rural household infrastructure. And that's of concern to me when we're talking about big backlogs and shortages. Then I just would like to know the, I'm only going to be short, Chair. The overall compensation of employees, there's been quite a big increase here now in 2010-11, as there was indeed 2009-10. So, and we've got another big jump. Are we catering for new appointments here, or is this just purely increases? And the other thing I would like to see, certainly in the senior management positions, whether we have all our vacancies filled. I think that is very important, because we will not deliver on any of this stuff if at the source we don't have the capacity to deliver. And just one last thing I would like to raise. We had Housing Development Agency with us a couple of weeks ago, or was it last week, I'm not sure, and they indicated land is extremely important to us, otherwise we can't build anything, that there is, they are concerned about the financing once they find the land. Are we allowing for that? I haven't been able to pick that up, and then the question of whether they pay for state-owned land, perhaps you could just inform us about that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is just a request, not just to appeal to you. We're together with Kaba, Julie, Laband in the Eastern Cape, all of us. There was a problem of the buckets at Dhaka and other Buffalo City municipality, but they said that it does not belong to us, it belongs to the district. Now there was a head of committee which went to Eastern Cape again. After 6 months, there was not even an inch to verify that. I'm appealing to the judge to now. It's not our duty to say that the Shuba, who's the head of the department, is still doing the job. It's you.
It is an embarrassment to us as a politician. If we go to a place and then after 6 months there's not even an inch of bulk water is there. It's not a problem of water. Bulk water is there, everything is there. It's not a question, it's just for you, the administration to just say, tomorrow the pocket must be PPS. It's an embarrassment to us. There's no question of bulk water. Water is there. Everything is there. It's just for you to say, do it now or don't do it. That's why at one place, and then acting this said, no, we are fired. This is it, and we can use that right now. Now we are fired. Now we can do. No, if you don't do your work, you are gone. It's an embarrassment to us. Yeah, it's the same thing.
Acting may I ask a question? Did you fire those people there, or they are still there? Over to you, you can respond with your team.
I discovered later that they say I do not have the power to do anything to them. I have asked my colleagues to take to note quite a number of suggestions that may need particular attention that will help our program certainly, and in that regard I think we will seek to put those together. May I anticipate that then we will have that discussion on the provincial plan, analysis of those plans and everything, and in that regard quite a lot of these policy issues we can begin to start to deal with there. As I indicated, our policy, the program that deals with policy to a large extent is increasingly stable, and this is an opportunity to just extract those things that need enhancement at that level. Our biggest problem is implementation, and implementation at this stage in terms of our configuration at provincial level and what role we play that is different is what will take a lot of our time going forward. And I think in that regard, we certainly from ourselves, service delivery, support as in support. We will be looking at those areas that we need to do that support appropriately to enhance that. But let me come back to the, and therefore I'll leave some of those comments perhaps for that particular discussion, because I think they will be more relevant there. But I may have to answer the questions, some of the questions that are direct. There is a use of households and units. Very often, sometimes you make the choice of using households simply because the solution isn't about a physical structure in terms of delivery. I mean, if people have access to rental housing, additional people to rental housing, you may account for the structure, the construction of the structure, but then in terms of what is the impact and benefit, you then say how many households are benefiting from that. And they change from time to time. And within a year, you could have three or four different people accessing the same unit. So it's the household you account for that on that basis. Perhaps the proposal that says when we have a discussion, maybe we can start to look at what are the key areas and indicators of performance that relate to those that we can agree. These are the things we will measure each other on. And I think it's a bit complex because we may then, as we deal with the plan, you want to be certain, do you want to account at a project level? Do you want to account general on the achievements of the program and then go and do the oversight with regard to how that gets done? I think that is an issue we may need to look at. It is not such a difficult, an easy one to resolve. I think the issue raised by Honorable Porter around our support and the extent which will be held responsible for. In the manner in which the outcomes are to be dealt with,
there are areas where, as a support department, where we are going to have specific requirements with regard to our role and commit to the primary deliver of that program outcome. At the moment, for example, in basic services, etc., our role is to ensure that we coordinate those contributions. Those departments then will have to sign substantive contributions and commitments with regard to the delivery. So should we, then, in relationship to bulk with COCTA, who is at the moment the custodian of the MIG, until the reforms or any changes are effected. We recognize that that is the situation, that is how we are structured. And in that regard, I agree with you that after we negotiate, we have our session on the delivery agreement, we will agree on exactly what is it that is expected of us. But we know that largely we are responsible for ensuring that there are settlements that are well planned, etc., etc. The bulk is required. And if that plan is complete, it can't be complete without a commitment to that bulk. And ours is to make sure that we enforce a commitment to that. Otherwise, you change the plan with regard to that precinct. And I think MIG contributes. I think what we're looking at is we're looking at the plethora of these funds. As I indicated on Friday, we did list quite a lot. We're looking at those plethora of those funds and saying the department responsible for and custodian to this must then commit in specific terms to those things. And if there are, because those are outside of our control. If there are shortages, there must be a commitment from Treasury, who is part of the discussion on how it will be financed later as part of the prioritization process. I committed to sufficiency of the funds with regard to the grant itself that we are managing. The sanitation funding is new in terms of our program. We also understood that based on historical agreements, there were commitments for that fund to stop at a certain funds and programs to be implemented and ended at particular stages. For example, what you see as 350 might have had some sort of effect on rollovers of the past, etc. So it might be distorting to think that it is such a huge amount and then a huge drop. But what you want to do is to be sure that all your ducks are in a row. Instead of absorbing 500 in the first year, you need to be sure that there is a very well-thought, integrated plan with the human settlements, which is what we are now doing, because we are now in one department integrating this thing. The second issue is that, yes, it's correct that at the start of our program, there may have been AC cases, maybe later in fuel situations, where at urban areas where we were delivering, we may not have provided the full solution to regard to sanitation. But certainly, infrastructure-wise, to the household for sanitation in most of our urban solutions, sanitation infrastructure provision is part of the what we're delivering. All of our houses, even those that were not connected, Chair, in Port Elizabeth, they were not connected not because they did not have a pipe to the toilet or to the kitchen. It was an issue of connecting it to the bigger thing, which is outside of the, which is unfortunate. But those things were provided. I think that's one of the things that caused alarm and concerns to the committee. These things are here. The infrastructure is there. It needed to be connected and metered. Because you can't meter, you do not have the meter, you have not connected. Almost creating an incentive for the communities to simply connect without accounting for services. Because if those things are there, and all because you do not have your meters, you do not connect, then you are creating a lawlessness, you are promoting lawlessness, which is an issue that we are having with that municipality. I've been there, back there in Port Elizabeth, to discuss some of those issues with those people. Chair, I note that four times there have been questions that relate to this fund for the affordable housing. the interest rate so that I indicate what it is. I think, Chair, what is there, which I can talk about because actually it's there, is that we have agreed that from coming out of the engagement, Honorable Porter, that we've had over the last 6-7 years with Ben, there were things we could not conclude with regard to those. One of them was the risk mitigating mechanism with them, not based on necessarily the concepts of the previous arrangements, but addressing what we require because government has gone a long way towards dealing with the issue of provision of housing and solutions to even this sector. However, inadequate it may have been. For an example, banks did raise the issue that there are risks here. They affect the price that they would charge to the people. That means if you are a high risk person, there's very little, there's no deposit. They price that in the cost of finance. And as you add 50 basis points for that risk, 100 basis points for that risk, when you do the overall assessment of that client, you discover that that client can't afford the loan. So those are the kinds of things we are dealing with. And what we're doing is to then say, what guarantee mechanism can we put? What institutional mechanism? Because although the president dealt with the issue on the basis of a guarantee, we're open as to the form of that, because there are innovative proposals that we have to consider around that, including insurance and all those kinds of things, mechanisms. But previously, for example, the BASA said, if we can set up an institution that can cover these things, and we agree on a formula for capitalizing it over a period of time, we then could be in a position to influence all of our members not to then take into account the discount from a pricing perspective with regard to that. And therefore, they will end up having to give more people access to loans on the basis that they can afford. Again, the other factors are considered. If you are a bad buyer and all those things, still a part of that process. You don't suddenly burden somebody's overburdened. You allow them the space to reduce their burdens and then take housing grant in the process. So I think those are the details. Some of the details we can't announce on because we need they may be dealt with by the minister. But it is on the basis of that commitment that we're saying that is what we have, and therefore we want to have a product that will then be out there and accessible, and then we can count how much it is accessed. As I indicated, we're also looking at FLISP in addition. FLISP as in finance linked individual subsidy program, on how we can look at that deposit provision, restructure it so as to ensure that more people can take up FLIP going forward. Honorable Dagana, I think you've made considerable input, Chair, most of which fall in the discussion that we will have. With that as it may, I think one or two issues I need to confirm with regard to the possible interpretation of contradictions, etc., with regard to that statement effectively. And it links up to the question that is asked about what do you do with people who don't qualify, who have access. And we have found that. In fact, one of the lessons out of informal settlement upgrading programs and the evaluation program that comes up now, and in N2 in particular, is that then as soon as you are dealing with informal settlements, you want to first make sure that you can incite to upgrade them if their densities are right. You provide for relocation of people where densities are wrong. Space for where they will be going, where after they will be post construction. Now, those are the three issues you deal with. Now, no sooner you have moved these people, you put them in a temporary relocation area,
at the point of allocating them to a house, you discover, they have already got a house in Port Elizabeth, in East London, in Knysna, or wherever. What do you do with them? They are there. In fact, the difficulty is sometimes they are not employed here in that settlement. They are looking for jobs. Now, at that point, to keep them that temporary location, it doesn't become a temporary thing now. It almost becomes a permanent thing. I'm sure we have seen it. It contains those kinds of challenges to the program. Now, programmatically, and this is where we might have been naive, and we need to make sure that our program does respond to this, to these issues through our research process, is that when you are qualifying, we say you can. You have an opportunity, because in the rental housing, we do not disqualify anybody. Not on the basis of whether they did receive a house or not. If there is accommodation, there is space, the person is willing to pay, then he or she can access. Whether he's got a house elsewhere, that program is flexible, does provide for this. We would have wanted lower levels of services that would allow, cheaper rental accommodation options to the best of our abilities. And that's why we developed the CRU, the Community Residential Unit Program, to cater for those situations. But sometimes when the person says, I'm unemployed, they still don't want to go to CRU. And very often, I think also, because our municipality's indigenous policy management is not quite where it should be in terms of efficiency, those people fall through the cracks. Those are realities on the ground. The policy is there, it does provide, it is reasonable, otherwise it may be accused of promoting inequity, because if you have benefited, you can't benefit because you happen to be in the wrong place, you happen to squat, etc. So you can't get it for the second time. That is what the policy provides. And I think those things are, and they remain, challenges. We are putting our hands around them. We think we have provided some solutions. They don't seem to have, in some cases, reflecting those things. The last thing is to just move them and put them away in such situations. We have them there. And I think in some provinces as well, there are such cases where people now, the general thing is not for them to be leading the toilets now in the wrong area, instead of getting rental and whatever is available for that. If you remember, we came to the committee when we were presenting the informal settlement upgrading program and said, our program says, if you have benefited before, we will give you a piece of land, you must pay. We will service the land, but then you will pay the service cost of land. Then you can build your top structure yourself, because you have already benefited elsewhere. But go to those communities, go to those upgrading, you get a territory. Those are reality. Because at the point of saying you have benefited, for you to stay and continue to be staying in that service site, you must then pay government for the servicing, because you've already received your subsidy. Then you find the title. Those are realities, and we need to deal with them in future. I think they remain unresolved. And Chair, I think the committee in contributing to the program, I think, could really assist us in dealing with it. While we are not reneging on our responsibility to find the ultimate solution, I think that was just one thing I thought we could deal with. There are the issues of sanitation. Chair, I think on the sanitation program, may I request that we note the comments that have been made. Maybe allow a space for a proper discussion on sanitation, because we ourselves are still seeking to get that program aligned to our thing. So that the one thing you do not want is an inefficient process where in your program you are providing for certain things and then there's another program that goes. But at least those areas of vulnerability, such as the schools program, etc., those things, I think, as are very urgent, and the rural situation, I mean, in rural situations, we have a very dire situation where people are still going to under trees and bushes and those kinds of areas. Those, I think, remain priorities and they need to be addressed urgently. We are working with DG Ngwanya's Rural Development and Land Reform Department on our contribution in respect of this, because this is our major contribution to the bigger strategy of dealing with rural development. And I think our approach is to say that rural development strategy must begin to deal with what is otherwise the accepted trend that is occurring, of saying what are the reasons why people are moving to cities, to the extent that you can provide the space and ability for those people to do that which they would otherwise choose to do. If people, for example, are grown in agricultural, rural situations, and they would want to continue doing agricultural activities, but because of the difficulties there, they move elsewhere. I think we should have an environment that allows for those people to remain there, but I'm not certain that we can stop all of them from moving towards areas where there's economic activity. What is important in the rural strategy is to find space for creating the incentives and the ability for people to develop those areas. I suspect that in 20, 30 years' time, we will have a question about whether or not those areas create sufficient demand, because they may be providing a solution for food. Food is going to be a big issue in the future, and we produce food more in those areas, and maybe those are the kinds of incentives that would be in the strategy. I think on the sanitation program, therefore, is one of the key areas in the rural areas that we are contributing to that strategy on, so that while at the construction level it does produce those temporary jobs, etc., it also provides a solution to the situation there. We face that challenge of having to deal with the nature of rural areas, because of some spaces in the distances, it is not cost effective to, for example, put certain solutions to sanitation, in terms of sanitation, to those areas. And the reality is that then if you are going to do that, there can be a question as to whether it is cost effective, in terms, given that the resources are limited. Quality remains our huge challenge. In the department, we are through that program in program 5 on housing institutions, and also the in program 3, the people dealing with service delivery support. We have institutions that we set up to assist with some of the quality control issues. One, our problem has been their performance, and two, the extent to which we may not have created the proper environment for them to play their role. We want them to play that role. If it means enhancing legislation, I think which we may come back to you to deal with, we will do so. But certainly we are asking from the NHBRC to upscale their own performance with regard to this, to play their proper role. We also think that we have for a long time allowed a situation where our housing programs are dealt with differently from the normal program. In your house, you have a municipal inspector, and that municipal inspector does not come once, at least they used not to, I hope they still. They come and do things and they put down things, they've got a mandate to do so. A national department official walks into a program, can't put down that thing, because they do not have that mandate. NHBRC can, because they've got a warranty to cover. Those are the kinds of things we're saying. At that particular level, we need to be sure those roles are enhanced and that there is a particular authority to deal with them appropriately. It remains a serious thing. But I think to a large extent, some of the quality problems we've had, quite honestly, have had something to do with people, which is another area. If you have somebody who is an engineer in a professional in a province
who certifies payments and goals does not do that work. No matter what you do, if you do not address the fact that he doesn't do the work and hold somebody accountable, MEC to the HOD, HOD to the program manager, program to that person, I think we will not be able to resolve it. Because most of them have something to do with people just not doing the work they were supposed to do. Tightening up of the performance agreements is the solution, and the holding of each other to account is also another one. I think the question we all have to ask, and I think the minister keeps once reflected to this, is when there has been substandard delivery yesterday, our question must be to a province, what did you do? Who? What happened to the person who was supposed to have made sure that it has happened? And if those things don't happen, we've got to find a way in which we, that somebody gets hold held to account with regard to that. But I think until we fix those things, we're not going to be able to deal with it. It just lies there. Most of them have been inspected. Most of them have been paid by somebody who said the work was done to specifications and etc. And therefore, something must have been to that person. In that regard, Chair, maybe we did not emphasize it. Under the program, internal audit and special investigation, is that initiative the minister has announced last year with regard to following all these rectification programs and other substandard delivery and uncompleted projects, following it up to the contractors and saying, what if either you fix this thing or you are held to account, and then you get investigated. That program is aimed at trying to address those things. We do hope that in the future, if people do the work, those things will reduce significantly. But that program is meant to hold people to account, and I think the SIU is at work. We may account for that at some stage during the course of the year, periodically, in spite of the engagement. I'm not so sure, Chair, because there is a request, there has been not a request, but I think an issue that has been raised by Honorable Singh about the expectation of the committee for us to account on a quarterly basis. I'm not sure. We will need to just establish how we do that, because we only come to the committee upon request. Whether we should, by as a matter of course, submit report, it might be something we can look at it after our quarterly evaluations with provinces and the department, we consolidate, submit to them.
But how in the monitoring has to be implemented in terms of the further regulations? The committee has to make follow up on those.
I think we can work it out, and I will make sure that I find people to deal with that in the department, and then the committee maybe can choose to call us in any one quarter, and if they are satisfied with that progress or they do not have time to read it, we could then accept that the reports have been submitted. I will certainly do that. My grant management people do submit these reports to Treasury and everybody else. Secondly, the strategic management unit in the department also produces our internal performance-related reports where we hold each other in the department about what we promised in terms of our operational plans to do. Those kinds of reports also can be provided about that performance to the committee. And I hope I have answered the question with regard to whether or not that unit is the one that is dealing with the management of performance. Each unit manager signs the performance agreement with the supervisor, and that is linked to the operational plan. Every quarter we hold internal discussions on the operational plan. To what extent has program one performed in terms of their targets and everything? We have seen they have begun to wake us up
some of those cases, where suddenly a month before somebody wakes up and realizes that the quota is coming to an end, and I may not have a chance. And just by doing that, you increase performance significantly. We can favor the department, the committee, with regard to that. We're going to the last quarter now, so the annual report will be presented at some stage. We may give an interim quarterly performance before we come with the annual report as a report to the committee. So I do not. I think we can be able to deal with that, Chair. There were those analytical things. Is it possible for us to take them off record? Because I took them and then I went away, and I may have missed some of them. But Mama, quite a lot of your input, they really come from some people who speak to be practical sometimes with regard to some of the things. Maybe we can leave those to the workshop or engagement, and we can address them. We are seeking to decrease the consultants, as I said, to the best of our ability. Again, it's not elimination of all consultants, reducing them to the bare minimum. Now, the question that has been asked specifically as I came back related to the issue as to why is our salary increasing to this extent and the issue of vacancies, etc. One, I think the main part of the increase relates to increases, planned increases in terms of the numbers, because our structure has been phased in over a period of time. We did have savings that have been utilized on salaries for various reasons. There are from time to time new vacancies. It is quite a big challenge, but at the senior management level, I can only recall of two chief directories that are not there. That's because we are questioning whether their functions should be changed, some of them. And I think on the 15th we'll have a process of realigning and organizational realignment and discussion with regard to the coming year, so that by the time we find the contracts, we're very clear about what people are expected to do. Mr. Stein, that issue of whether these service level agreements, delivery agreements, there will be, the President did announce that there will be political delivery agreements with him, performance agreements with him. I'm sure the President has a way of making sure that that is published. He will deal with it at the political level on that basis. But certainly what they will contain and should contain is what departments came to you and said, these are our plans and this is what we are planning to do. And I think in that regard, for our minister, after he has committed everybody else, I'm sure he can share what he is committing to deliver with regard to his
I am not sure, Chair, whether Mr. Machoba, Honorable Machoba, I think I take note of the issue right with regard to Duncan Village, those buckets. We will address it. We will address it. We are also we would be equally content if it continues for a long time. After sanitation is already under our control, that it doesn't get addressed. I think we have a better leverage over that. Now, I apologize that it has not been addressed to the extent that it was required when we visited them. I think in that regard, I suspect I've dealt with most of the issues.
No, I think we have dealt with them because we have agreed already that we still have another session. So those questions cannot be addressed now holistically. But I think the issue that was raised by Honorable Machoba, it's very painful. That issue of the cut, it goes, it relates to what Honorable Nagude was talking about.
You know, it's very, very pathetic. And when we left there, we were promised that thing was going to be addressed because children were at stake. Children were at stake, and the portfolio committee witnessed that. If we were there in October, and then the parliamentary coordinated oversight went there again 2 weeks ago, if that issue is not yet addressed, really, we are a disgrace. I'm really telling you, we are a disgrace. But in short, I just want to say I've also noted some few issues that I think we have to look at them when we are meeting in the next session. Because we haven't mentioned the issue, because we are seeing here the RALF funding, and there has been nothing that has been stipulated about this, because RALF was not has not been granted any funding before, but now we are seeing RALF appearing here. So, and we were expecting the department even before this to come to us. What is the situation about this scheme that is being proposed, this voucher scheme, rural scheme? And then the other issue, yeah, I don't have a problem on the SHRA because I understand that the process is underway. Just to inform the members that yesterday the selection committee did their task, and the portfolio committee was represented. I was part of the selection committee as in terms of the legislation, and I think the chairperson of the social development was also invited, so Parliament was represented, and I think we have to commend the department because this is the first time of its kind that the committee is involved in this process. So we reassure the committee that by April, this board will be in place. Then there's that Social Housing Foundation funding. And when you look at the at page 16, there's also rental and people's housing process. So I think those we need to explore, because there is a confusion, I think, amongst the members. When you talk of rental housing, some of us think of this social housing rental stock. And now I think we have to explore, because there's funding on rental housing and the people's housing. There's also funding on the Social Housing Foundation, and you know, those issues, I think they have to be explored clearly. And then the other issue members have raised, the issue of migration. I think we have to pursue a debate on the issue of immigration too, because if you look at this immigration trends, they do have an impact on the rental housing itself. So the department has been so silent. I think it's time that we have to break that silence. How do we make sure that those issues do not have a negative impact on the side of human settlements development? We must be vocal, we must speak about them. Let's not be shy of raising these issues, because we'll find that there is a confusion between our communities. They have this perception that the foreigners are given houses and they are not prioritized. So I think we need to do something about that, so that people must understand what is really going on. And on the issue of saying, no, they buy those houses, is that legitimate? That's the questions we have to ask ourselves. On the issues, we'll say that they buy land, something else. We need to debate on those issues. And then I think the task of the department, it becomes, it's more expanded than how we view it currently. And I think the facilitation part of it, for me, is something that is more and above the facilitation part of it on the other side of the other department. And then there's also an issue of, because those people cannot disqualify them, these foreigners, they cannot be disqualified from renting the house. So I think we have to speak to that. And then the other issue, Mr. Lalonde, this committee will not let you go off the hook about the cooperative sector. It is there in the Cooperative Act of 2005, spelled the housing cooperative. And last week, the committee, I remember our whip, uthethe kamanga kakhulu ngendaba ye cooperative. And apha asiboni nto, but I'm not saying asiboni nto, because we are still waiting for the next session, and we are looking at that. There has to be something that is being spelled out about this program. And then the issue of curbing the migration. Mama raised that question. We still have, we can curb the migration, because the president spoke of establishing new cities, spoke about establishing new towns. We are not saying anything about new towns, because it's not that those people are running for cities. Those people are running even for those smaller nyana towns across Manabeka Kona Imiku. We are looking at Kokstad or Matatiel being developed as a city. What is the plan that we are having? Because really, those issues are very much important. And what are we going to do to resuscitate? Because we are having to have to facilitate other activities. We have been to Stekstrom, Usizi Olupa, Ezazindlu, the corner of the houses, God, the economic activities, the pelile. So, what are we expecting from those people there? We do have the subsidy houses there, but mapila kanjani, how do we facilitate? So the greening part, the whatever those programs, I think they have to be explored into our, because what, how do we link with the agriculture? So those things should be there. The issue of sanitation, I think it's one of the areas that we can be able to explicit job creation, more especially in rural areas. How do we train those people? How do we train those communities? So that there's a toilet doesn't fail. And then how do we monitor? Because there has been a lot of fraud and corruption issues there. And then the cutting of cost building materials. That is one of the areas. I don't believe that we can just sit and fold our arms as government and we say no. That is natural. We can't. We have to be creative to make sure that at least we must come up with something. How do we see that this area is being attended to as government? We have to be creative on those issues. And then the last part is the issue of the early warning signs that have been stipulated here. I think we need more. We need more of what mechanism are you going to make sure that, no, here, really, we won't get anywhere in this delivering of this project. So we need the department to come up and explore more. And then the issue of sanitation, that 350, I think we need to have during the annual report, because that funding has been taken from the human settlements and was raised that grant. But the accounting part of it, I'm sure, I don't know, but we need to get more information about this one. And then how is it going to be accounted for if it was taken to another department? So we need those issues to be explored in the next meeting. Otherwise, I wish to thank the department, departmental team, for their, in fact, for their commitment and their time to respond to the question.